Did you get a hold of Burma's kennel? Okay. Dr. Bennett, I don't know if you heard that. Ms. Carvis is having trouble joining the meeting right now, so we're going to send her a link to the meeting so that we can get her available.
I'm following. Yes, thank you.
Is there an option for her just to phone in, or can we get her on the conference line if she can't join by the Google Meet?
No.
I am Ms. Carvis. Okay. Well, thank you. Okay. This is Dr. Richard Guarino, Chairman of the Board of Chiropractic Examiners. This is the time and place for formal interview in the matter of Dr. Robert Doty in multiple case numbers, which include 2018-021, 2018-022, 2018-030, 2018-041, and 2018-045. This matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to it by ARS 32-924F. Dr. Doty, are you present?
Dr. Doty is not present. I am appearing today because I have requested this matter be continued to the January meeting via email to Ms. Fennell and Dr. Munieri, based on the fact that we did not finally receive materials for the matter pursuant to ARS 32-3206. While I certainly don't blame the board staff for the lateness of the materials, in this instance, I'm not able to waive the requirement. We requested the material upon receipt of the board's letter on November 3rd, 2021, informing them of this being scheduled. We responded within the statutory time frame, sent a letter to ruling number 16, indicating that we would appear, and pursuant to 32-3206, made a copy of a request for a copy of the available file material. For that statute, the material has to be provided 10 business days in advance of the meeting in order for notice to be proper. I have not received them, and now, because I have not received them, I sent an email last Friday and asked for the status of them. I was then told by board staff that they had just received the material and would be providing them. However, given the fact that we are dealing with several complaints and that I unfortunately was already scheduled for other matters. Earlier this week, I was not going to have the appropriate time to review the materials and meet with my client and allow him to review them. And on that basis, the board staff and executive director indicated to me that I would need to adhere today before the board to request the continuance to the January meeting. Myself and Dr. Doty are both available. I understand, obviously, these are very old case numbers. We would like to see these matters come to resolution. And I'm always going to work with the board, but unfortunately, in this instance, I can't wait for the statutory notice and therefore request that this be tabled and moved to the January meeting.
Okay, so let me check in with staff and our attorney, Mr. Monahan. So what are our options? Well, first of all, Ms. Carvis, did you represented Dr. Doty in the past for this matter?
Yes, I represented him for these matters.
And we don't have any additional materials. Did you receive all these materials for the when you appeared before us back in February of 2019?
I received materials at that point in time. However, I believe that there was a new board brief, and that is what I just received on Friday. And again, pursuant to the statute, I'm supposed to receive materials 10 business days prior to the meeting.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Carvis. So, Mr. Monahan, what are our options?
You have the option to continue the matter.
This is Attorney General James Monahan. You have the ability to continue the matter to January based on her argument that she didn't receive the materials 10 days before the meeting, or you can continue this matter if you believe that there's nothing new in the materials with the understanding that that could be an appealable issue later on.
Okay. And then can I check in with staff? Do we concur that Ms. Carvis didn't get the materials in time within the timely filing notice?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Chairman Guarino, the material that Ms. Carvis is referring to has to do with a board brief. The board brief is provided as a courtesy, so there are no new material or additional documents in this case, none of the cases. So it was just a board brief that was received after the board members received that document.
Okay. So it's appealable if we hear it today. It's appealable either way.
You'd like to know if they take an extension of the legal advice.
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion for that.
I'll second.
Okay, those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay, we're going to go into executive session. That means we're going to leave the room. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We're going to get legal advice from our counsel, and then we'll be back. Dr. Bennett, remember to make sure you're not broadcasting for the rest of the meeting. Time is now 9:32. Dr. Bennett, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can. I'm back to a red and green flashing mic, so we're going to hope for the best for a while. Ms. Carvis, you can hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, we're going to continue this matter to the next meeting.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the accommodation on both my comments.
All right, thank you. All right, so that concludes the formal interview for Dr. Doty for today, and we're going to move on to our next order of business, which is tab number 2 in the matter of Dr. Stacy DeWolf. Hi, welcome. Come on up, have a seat. We've got a microphone in front of you. If you click it one time, it should go to green, hopefully. Okay, this is Dr. Richard Guarino. This is the time and place for formal interview in the matter of Dr. Stacy DeWolf and multiple case numbers, which include 2018-031, 2018-032, 2018-040, and 2018-044. This matter will be heard by our board pursuant to the authority given to it by ARS 32-924F. Dr. DeWolf, please introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Stacy DeWolf.
Hi, welcome. Thank you. And are you represented by legal counsel today?
No.
Dr. DeWolf, you have received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take at this formal interview. Those options include dismissal, issuing a non-disciplinary advisory letter, issuing a disciplinary letter of concern, censure, restitution, placing your license on probation, assessing the civil penalty, or referring the matter to a formal hearing. The purpose of the formal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. Board members have read all the materials. If you have any additional materials you would like to present to the board, you can do so now. Do you have anything for us?
That is to be determined. I apologize, but my failure to update my address with the board created a situation where I just got this information recently. And last night I was just trying to rewrap my head around this case since it's been so long. So I'm not quite sure exactly what you have. I feel as though I did submit everything back then, but there could be some missing links here. I apologize if there's any gaps we need to fill. I'd be happy to do that and send it along your way. I did find some information that I had submitted to the Attorney General that I forwarded on to Jackie last night. I know that's very late notice, but I was just able to dive into this last night based on the notice I was given. So.
Okay, and I've got a memo from what you sent the other night.
Okay, great.
Okay. So if you don't have anything for right now, we'll hold off on it for now.
Okay.
During the course of the interview, if it is necessary to refer to any patients, we're going to protect their identity by referring to them with initials only.
Sure.
This proceeding is being recorded by a court reporter. As a result, it is important that everyone speaks loudly and clearly and that only one person speaks at a time. I'm going to ask my board members and staff to introduce themselves for the record. So let's start over here with Ms. Kennel.
Jackie Kennel, investigator.
And Dr. Richard Guarino, chairman.
Dr. Steve Knopf, professional member.
Mitchell Turbinson, public member.
I apologize, it's not turning green now. All right, Michael Nairi, executive director for the board.
Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan.
Okay, thank you. Now I'm going to ask that our witnesses be sworn in by our court reporter. That's you, Dr. DeWolf. And at this time, I think we'll start with you. There may be patients that also need to be sworn in if they're going to be testifying. So go ahead and swear. Thank you. Okay. Dr. Nairi, will you please give us a brief summary of the allegations in this case? And when he does that afterwards, you'll have a chance to respond.
Sure. Yes, sir. In the matter of Dr. Stacy DeWolf, allegations of improper billing, impersonating another practitioner, unprofessional conduct, failing to respond to board subpoena. And as far as the formal interview, board meeting on February 27, 2019, Dr. DeWolf was not present and not represented by legal counsel. The board heard testimony from seven patients and a privately contracted medical billing. Dr. Guarino reminded everyone that the board does not have jurisdiction over fee disputes. Dr. Guarino stated that any treating provider is responsible for overseeing all the billing and is ultimately responsible for everything that happens in the office. Dr. Guarino asked the privately contracted medical biller if billed
we're going out for her Pilates services under Dr. DeWolf and Dr. Doty's name instead of hers. She replied, yes. Would you like me to continue to read the motion?
No, that's fine. We'll start with that. And so with our multiple cases, go ahead and if you, I mean, you've read the board brief and the allegations of why you're here, and you just heard Dr. Nayeri state why you know what our board brief says. What do you say to the allegations?
First and foremost, that is the first time I've heard that. I just have what I had received yesterday, which was just a couple paragraphs on each case. Ultimately, I haven't practiced in about 10 years. I ran the business. I had other doctors working for me. I was not involved in billing in any way, shape, or form. That was my business partner. I simply came in when the billing department was failing, and I stepped in and had to look at it and send patients bills who we weren't getting paid on. It was simply a matter of their insurance company didn't cover what they were supposed to, and the patients attacked me as a business owner instead of their insurance company. I mean, that's ultimately the wrong projection, I feel. But that's really what this came down to. And the reason there were such a large number of complaints is because patient VL, he was on a social platform and tried to recruit a bunch of people who would receive the bills. And then you get into groupthink mode, and you have these crazy unsubstantiated claims by so many people because they don't want to pay the bill. And it's unfortunate that insurance companies do this, but apparently the doctors become the bad guys when this happens. So that's where I am. It has nothing to do with me practicing because I haven't practiced in 10 years.
Okay, so I understand that Dr. Doty, you were married.
Yes.
And then you divorced at some point.
Yes.
And so is it your testimony today that you did not treat any of the patients? You were not a treating chiropractor. You were a business owner handling business matters.
That is correct.
Like insurance billing, that type of thing.
Yes.
Okay. And so we have these multiple cases that have a similar thread, that it sounded like Dr. Doty made these promises to patients about what a fee agreement might be. And in some cases, there were allegations of, here's a TENS unit, don't worry about it, it's not going to cost you anything. And then they get a ridiculous bill at some point from you as they're trying to collect, or as they're trying to collect from this account after Dr. Doty has left the practice. Mm-hmm. Another example will be telling a patient, hey, you've got to just pay me $30 each time when you come in, and we're going to collect from the insurance company, and once your deductible hits, whatever happens after that, you're not going to be responsible for that. We have testimony towards that effect, and then they can balance the bill later. So there are these things that should not have been happening, and my question for you is, were these agreements in writing? And were you aware of any of these when you went back and balance billed these patients?
Nothing was in writing. I was unaware of any arrangement that they made. Ultimately, I spoke to patients who had bills and worked through it with most patients. You had this handful of people who just kind of got an idea in their head and went with it, even though I tried to work with them. Ultimately, what they were being billed for is, one, if they kept insurance checks, which, because we were out of network. And many patients did that. They did not remit them to us. They kept them and were like, I don't have any money. No, I'm not going to pay you. Like, so there's that. And it was for services that their insurance companies did not cover, even though they had coverage under their benefit plan. So I'm not sure what Dr. Doty said to any of these patients. The bottom line is, if your insurance company did not pay for your treatment and it cost me as a business owner X amount of dollars to provide you that treatment, I shouldn't have to come out of pocket for that. Someone should be responsible. And people all sign these disclosure of fees, and it says right on it that they're responsible for, if I remember correctly, it says they're responsible for covering anything the insurance companies don't cover. So it's pretty straightforward.
Okay, so one of the problems that we have is that we didn't
have a working address for you, which is a violation of statute. You're supposed to let us know within a couple of days that you would have had that. You would have seen a subpoena that requested these patient records, and we would have a better conversation about these are the patient records, it either matches or doesn't match the billing. This is the financial agreement. We don't have any of that right now.
Okay, well, I can provide that to you.
It's a very difficult place to be in the early stages of investigation. You know, we're trying to get some facts in line so that we can decide ultimately if we need to take any disciplinary action or not, which happens in a formal interview and a formal hearing. Well, here we are now, a few years later, we still don't have the information, and we're looking at, you know, potential disciplinary action regarding this. You know, we had a room full of patients testifying a couple of years ago on these matters. All of them upset about the billing practices. This whole investigation our schedule of hearing this matter has been completely unfair to the patients that are involved in this case, and our duty is to protect the patients. So I've got a few more questions for you, and then I'm going to ask my board members. We may have patients that are complainants in these individual cases that we're going to hear from one at a time if they're here in person or if they're on virtually. And so I think what we'll do is start with general questions for Dr. DeWolf, and then we'll have to handle the cases one at a time and see if the patients want to be sworn in and testify at that point that are the complainants. So to gather a few facts, you know, you're saying that you don't know what kind of conversations Dr. Doty, you know, had, but you're also saying that you were in charge of billing and you were involved on the business side of this.
Correction, I was not involved in billing. That is the only aspect of the business that I was not part of. That was Dr. Doty. It wasn't until the end when I had to step in because we were hemorrhaging money. And trust me, I tried to get that information from him for over 2 years. Finally, I just had to call the company and access the billing side of things. And I realized, you know, all this money, all this insurance company money that either people were keeping or we weren't being paid because of services and the patients were still coming in. So then I had to do damage control at that point. I don't know if it's helpful for me to say this, but I feel as though it is because I'm a huge... I value time, and I value all of your time. I feel as though all of this might be just a moot point, considering none of these patients, I never followed through on any. I mean, we sent them bills to open up conversations, but none of these people are in collections. It's been 3 years. I never sent anyone. I mean, I hired a collection company originally, but it was just too much chaos. And I chose to focus on my career and building my future instead of focusing on the... on this toxicity in my life. So I just walked away from it. I let it go. None of these people, and it's not affected any of their lives. So there was just so much chaos there, and I just didn't want to deal with it. So
that's a pretty bold statement that you just said, that it's not affecting any of their lives. We've had testimony from patients that have done a collection that have had credit report problems as a result of the balance billing that happened when they thought that they had a deal with Dr. Doty, and then... you turned around and balance bill them sometimes for $12,000 or more. Okay, so there's a lot at stake right here, and there's a lot at stake for you. You know, if there's fraudulent billing that happens, it's not okay just to go ahead and say, hey, we're going to hold the patient harmless, and in the meantime, create all these fraudulent billing fees that may have happened. And we need to get to the bottom of that in our investigation and find that out.
Okay,
that's why we're here.
They may have said that their credit scores. But did anyone substantiate that? Did anyone show you? Because my collection company removed themselves from it. So no one should have anything on their credit. I was told by my collection company. And that's what I just chose to do. I mean, there was a lot of money out there, but I just figured it's not worth it. Like, these people are frustrated and they don't understand what's happening here, and I don't have the time to, you know, justify, like, all of this.
Can you understand their frustration if they thought that they had some type of a verbal fee agreement with Dr. Doty and then given some practice and then they get these bills for multiple $1,000s?
I understand it, but ultimately it comes down to their insurance company not covering their services. So that's not on me. That's on their insurance company. I mean, if you go to a hospital and they don't cover your surgery, they're going to bill you for it. So why are chiropractors different? Why do we have to sacrifice in doing
that? Well, I'll tell you how it's different. It's unprofessional, and it reflects poorly on all chiropractors. When patients can't trust their chiropractor and they go in and they think that they have an agreement, even if it's a fee agreement, and then they turn around and get a bill for $8,000 or $10,000 or $12,000, it makes them maybe not want to go to another chiropractor ever again. It's not good for the profession. It's not good for patient care when something like that happens. Okay, so your testimony today is that you were not involved in billing until the divorce happened, he left the practice, and then you said, okay, I've got to collect on these accounts, and I don't know what agreements he had with anybody, so I'm gonna apply the network deductibles or whatever happens. You're gonna go ahead and process the insurance claims and then balance bill the patients and hold them accountable.
It wasn't balance billing. Okay. We billed them for what their insurance company didn't cover. It wasn't like we billed out $500 for a service out of network and the insurance company paid $200 and we were like, here, you owe $300. It wasn't that at all. Because that's sketchy. This was legitimately like for an hour of physical therapy, it's $120, and we've reduced our insurance would have paid us $120.
They didn't cover it. We're picking up a lot of noise on the phone, so I'm going to remind anybody who's joining, if you've got any background noise, virtually just go ahead and mute yourself until it's time to talk. All right. So I think you're
sorry. So it wasn't balance billing at all. It was adjusting the price down to what we would have paid by the insurance company.
Dropping out, back in, I'm trying to log in over the phone. There was some feedback there. I apologize.
Okay, we can hear you now, Dr. Bennett. Thank you. Okay. So,
I'm sorry. I was just reiterating that it wasn't balance billing. For example, if you billed out $500 for a service, insurance company paid $200. We weren't billing out that extra $300. We were adjusting down the patient balances to what the insurance company would have paid for that visit and sending them a bill for that. So it wasn't balance billing. It was just a bill for either services that they already did get paid on from the insurance company. This insurance company sent them the check because they were out of network, or they just flat out didn't cover it. And I even invited people to contact their insurance company or even their HR department if they have a self-funded policy to discuss with them and figure out why they weren't paying. Because in my experience, it's a lot more effective if the patient pursues it than the chiropractor.
And I appreciate concise answers to the respect of time, and I appreciate your thoroughness because it's the first time we're hearing from you. So another question I have is, you had an independent billing company before your divorce that Dr. Billy and your clinic used, and that billing company, you no longer retained after the fact, or how did you handle your billing afterwards, after Dr. Billy left the practice, and you said you had to take over and figure out what was going on and handle the billing at that point? What was your step with that? Did you use the same billing company, or did you try to do it yourself, or did you hire someone new?
No, I brought in a bigger company who knew what they were doing because the previous person didn't, and to their credit, they had the potential to do well. They just weren't given the what they needed from Dr. Doty, is what I've been told. So I did bring in a company that actually was directly through our EHR, and then they started to go through things and get things trimmed down to what was actually legitimate and, you know, what needs to be written off.
Okay. And so you're aware, you know, the belief of the board in the past is if you're a co-owner of a clinic, you are responsible for the things that happen in that clinic. And you should be supervising billing and doing things that make sure that there is no fraudulent billing. And so it doesn't absolve you to say, you know, while Dr. Doty was around, they were doing this, and I was just kind of a background partner. You know, in our eyes, you are responsible. And so while that was happening, there was an allegation that there was billing under a naturopath, Dr. Wanda, that claims would get denied for chiropractic services, and then it was, let's try this under Dr. Blonda's license, and if it got paid, there was a communication that said, well, let's send all of those claims for that patient under Dr. Blonda's license, when that doctor didn't even treat the patient for the chiropractic services. Are you aware of this?
I am completely unaware.
So it wasn't a general practice that you were aware of, or did it ever happen that you guys just resubmitted under Dr. Blonda's name?
Not that I know of. I mean, I didn't even have access to the billing systems until after Dr. Blonda left.
Okay. All right. I'm going to ask my board members if they have any questions for you specifically. I guess for now, any cases are fair game, and then we'll have to see if our complaints are here. So let's have a discussion now.
Okay, thank you. Back to the board. Can you explain your business involvement just so I'm a little more clear prior to you stepping into the building capacity? I think I heard you say that you really weren't involved with the practice. You've not treated since within the last 10 years, so that puts us back in 2011. What was your role within owning the business at High Street?
So originally it was my business with my husband, and then I had babies, so I was staying at home with my babies. But I was also, you know, taking care of running the business, you know, from home whenever I could. I wasn't in the office very much. I was basically focusing on raising my children. And then as they got older, I worked on, like, training. We did a lot of Pilates rehab, so I did a lot of training there. And we had an office manager that ran the show, and Dr. Doty was the one present in the office. It was kind of like our business together, and so then when the divorce, that's the long story.
So in the course of this, one of the things that came out as an allegation from a patient was billing for Pilates services at different PT or rehab. Do you know if that was the case that happened out of your clinic?
Well, patients who were receiving Pilates rehab with our physical therapist were billed for physical therapy. Pilates is a very effective form of physical therapy, and that's what she used.
So any patient that would have received any kind of Pilates instruction would have been from a licensed physical therapist in your office?
Yes, or one of her assistants.
Okay. And then in your mind that would have been billed then correctly under the physical therapist's license?
If the physical therapist, she was performing the task, or if one of her assistants was, and that. I'm with that.
Okay, so it sounds like, just to recap quickly, there was little business management leading up to really the summer, fall of 2017. You helped train some staff, maybe helped put some clinic orders and supplies, but you weren't rendering treatment to patients.
No, I wasn't even in the office.
And you didn't have access to any of the billing systems at that point. So who, ultimately, anyone who is submitting billing from the office is ran through this third party that you previously contracted with?
Yes, it was actually, a person in India who did our billing.
And who sourced that company?
I think I found him on, like, Upwork or something. He had billing experience in the medical industry.
All right. And then in mid to late 2017, there was some issues with the business. You felt like there was maybe money on the table to try to right-size the finances of the business. So you hired a new third-party billing company to see what might be outstanding for patient care within the factory.
Yeah, that's right. It's like the AR to pay for the liabilities.
That's all the questions.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Knopf. And so a follow-up question that I have is, did Dr. Doty request the records for these patients from you? So, you know, in our past conversations with him, you know, he said, you're the custodian of records, and he doesn't have access to the records, and so that's why he can't get those to us. And you're saying that he never requested them directly from you?
He never did, and he's still 50% owner of these companies. He can access his patient records whenever he wants. There's needs to pay some money to open up the software to the, I guess, the account.
Okay, what software is it?
It's Vericle. It's a cloud-based EHR.
What is it called,
I'm
sorry?
Vericle.
How do you spell that?
V-E-R-I-C-L-E.
Okay.
And they might not even exist anymore. I'm sorry, that was, you know, almost 4 years ago.
Okay. And so, we don't know the, all that we have is the testimony. You know, we don't have your divorce decree. We don't know what he is responsible and what he is not responsible for. But our understanding was that when you guys split up, that you took over control of the company, and he was kind of locked out and wouldn't have access to those records according to his testimony. And you're saying now that he's a 50-50 owner still in the company, and he could access those records.
Just to clarify, after we decided to part ways in the business, which was after our divorce, I was going to take it over because I wanted to rebuild it because, you know, I just, it was my baby in the beginning. So we parted ways, but then he wouldn't sign the final agreement for us to, for it to be mine and for him to walk away. He wouldn't sign it. So ultimately, he's still 50% owner. But it hasn't been an operation.
Okay, so you had a verbal agreement, but he never signed it.
He never called through because, of course, there was some give and take and, you know, with it, and he's not a bit. So, but either way, it wasn't a concern to me because the business wasn't operating at that point anyway. So,
right.
It wasn't anything.
Okay. All right. How about Mr. Turbinson?
Sure. I'm not sure if this is on, but I'll speak loud. So you stepped in 2017?
Yes.
Okay, and you made a comment that you tried to get info for 2 years. What information are you talking about?
The billing information,
okay.
Like our accounts receivable, because, I mean, we were very busy, and based on the numbers in our past, we should have been making a profit, and we were bleeding money, and I was like, so many texts, please send me these AR reports. You need to look at billing. Are you sitting down with Harry to do the billing job? And of course, we were separated and divorced, and it's just leave me alone. I'm taking care of it. This is my job. Don't get involved. So I, you know, it was a 2-year struggle, and then, you know, ultimately that was his responsibility. I mean, I had a lot of other responsibilities, and it was just toxic. And I just fine. You deal with it, then you deal with it. And I shouldn't have put it off for so long, but like I said, it was toxic, and we weren't in a good place because we were divorced and fighting in court over that, and I just didn't pursue it until it got to the point where my staff needed to be paid, and I'm like, where is our money? And so I went in and I called the company, and I'm like, I need access. I'm the owner. Here are the articles of organization. Like, you need to give me access. And that's when they did, and that's when we had almost $2 million worth of accounts receivable, which was inflated, of course. A lot of it needed to be adjusted off, but there was a lot of money people owed us, and a lot of money kept from insurance companies that were paying for patients.
And so you originally were going through Dr. Doty, and then you went straight to, is this the company that was out of India?
No, the guy out of India is the guy who just oversaw our billing. He was responsible for following up on claims and things like that. It was through our EHR. We did our billing through the EHR, so I contacted them to get access because, like I said, I wasn't in the office. I didn't need access to the EHR. I wasn't doing notes. I wasn't billing. So then they gave me access to that, and it was a big surprise.
And how long after you contacted the EHR did you get access?
A couple days.
Okay. And do you remember when you contacted the EHR?
Yeah, it would have been the end of July of 2017.
Okay. So, but again, going back, when you say you tried to get info for 2 years...
That was before then.
So you started in 2015 to get the information?
I started for 2 years trying to get information from Dr. Doty's story, I should have clarified. And it wasn't until that point that was the breaking point where I went and contacted the HR and just got my own access to be able to see what was going on in the billing realm of things.
Okay. And you also mentioned that that the company in India was not getting the information they needed from Dr. Doty. What information are you referring to?
Well, there'd be, you know, claims were denied, and they were like, well, we just need records, and he wouldn't provide them with records or things like that. He later admitted when we were in mediation over the parting of the company and who was going to get the company and whatnot, that he just decided to do it despite me. He wanted to sit back. He was mad at me for divorcing him, and so he just wanted to let the company dissolve because he had already started a new company over on the side. So he just stopped collecting and doing his job.
Did you have the records?
I'm sorry, the patient records.
Right.
Well, once I had billing, once I had access to the EHR, I could access patient records. So that was after, that was at that point, the end of July, when I got the login for the EHR. That's when I could start accessing patient records.
Okay.
Which I did, you know, send them to our new billing company and whatnot.
Okay. I don't have any further questions.
I've got a follow-up. You said that there were many conversations around Dr. Doty saying, look, I've got feelings, that's my responsibility, don't worry about it. Did you be able to produce any of those communications?
I think so.
For the board?
Okay, and so this is Dr. Garino again. So just to get the timeline correct, your divorce was around May of 2017?
Yes.
Okay. And then Dr. Doty was out of the practice by September of 2017?
Yes.
Correct. Okay. So, you know, we had your testimony today was that you were an out-of-network provider. Was that with all insurance companies, or how did that work?
I don't remember. I think that...
I mean, because you made reference to, okay, out-of-network patients, you know, they got the, you know, the assignment of benefits, they got the checks, and they were mm-hmm. supposed to bring that money into you, so you bill them for that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you handle that differently with patients that were in-network?
I don't know if Dr. Doty was in-network with UHC. I can't recall. I know at some point you were, but you may have been out of network at the end. In network.
Well, we're not talking about specifics, so we'll get to that later. Okay. Ms. Powell, you might have some questions.
Yeah, thank you. I'll speak up. you have the patient records. Did you send them when they were requested? As you're going through the ARs and you're reviewing them, you're seeing all they need is patient records to get paid. Did you send patient records?
Well, it wasn't all of the claims. They just needed records. There were a lot of things. But yes, I instructed the billing company. I mean, all the billing company, and they were the billing company for the EHR, so they knew the system very well, and that's why I used them, so they could just go in and pull the records and send them if they needed them, because they weren't my records, you know. They were Dr. Doty's or Dr. Wander or Dr. Gold for these records, so...
The records were, once the requests were sent in before.
Yes.
And so the client could get paid?
Yes.
And did you track those to see if they were denied or paid? Or
I didn't have time to track every single one of them, but I looked at the reports. And
there were a lot?
Yeah, it was insane. That's why I eventually just was like, this is too toxic. I know there's a lot of money out there, but I need to focus on what's working for me, which is rebuilding my career.
Is there any reason why we don't have those records today? You have them, right?
Yes.
And you've been aware this is going on since 2017?
Yeah, and I thought I complied with everything I answered before. I filed my responses to these. I don't recall ever receiving requests for patient records. I could be wrong because there was a lot going on. And to be honest, after a while, you just kind of put the toxicity aside and you're like, oh, I can't do it.
I understand that that's not the patient's problem. And when they're giving us this kind of testimony, this much information, it would be nice to be able to verify what their financial policy was, their clinic was, and it was yours and your husband's both. And you're saying still is. You both told me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to figure out why we couldn't obtain this information from your husband.
I went back in my emails last night and I was looking at what I had sent you, and I apologize because I did send some things from an email that is just gone now, so I don't have that documentation. But I did find things that I sent for patient DL and DM. I know because there were so many complaints, the Attorney General did look into this, and there was a case there, and there was tons of files there sent. And I know, I think you guys have access to that too, so I can give you whatever you need.
Thank you.
That's all.
I have no other questions.
I've got a follow-up. Is the business still open and operating today?
Oh,
you said you're both owners, but it's not operating.
No, shortly after Dr. Derby left, I just walked away and focused on what I was doing in my career. So.
And then he said that there was a complaint made to the Attorney General's office in regards to some of the patients in this matter.
Yes, this group of people that had come together in groupthink mode, you know, they were like, let's do every avenue we can. So it was the Attorney General and the board. The Attorney General, what I've already dealt with, they've received every piece of information I've had in my practice. And that should be on file. And as far as I know, nothing is pursued.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Bennett has to sign off with apologies. I was not texting anyone on this meeting. He texted me that he had internet issues, but he was calling him, so I'm not sure if he's back on the call yet.
Okay. And my mic is completely dead, so if anybody has any trouble hearing me, just let me know. Okay. Dr. Bennett.
Mr. Chairman, this is Dr. Bennett. This is Dr. Bennett. Can you hear me?
They're coming in loud and clear. Thank you. All right. Before we get
okay, I'm now telephonically connected, and it's still not good, but I'm hanging in there as best I can.
Okay. Thank you. Before we get to you and your question, I want to ask Dr. DeWolf. So you were given a you were offered a consent agreement to retire your license, basically, correct? And you were not happy with the terms of that. Did you wish to continue practicing? Is it your hope to continue to keep your license, or where are you with that?
It doesn't matter to me because I don't practice. I do something completely different. The reason I had that is because I said I don't want to deal with this anymore. It was such a toxic time in my life. No patients were brought, you know, followed through with collections or whatnot. As far as I'm concerned, like, it's just done, it's buried, and I'm like, what are my options so I don't have to deal with this? And I was going to sign it. It wasn't that I didn't agree with the terms at all. It was the fact that just reading the claims, I'm like, they're just so crazy that I just want to have my voice heard, and I'm at a place in my life where I can revisit the toxicity and address it, even though I don't feel it. I think it's all personally, but anyhow, yes, I did not sign that, but it was just so I had the opportunity today to come to sign it.
And Dr. Green, unfortunately, board members, I was not around when this case came before the board, so basically I took the old brief and just included the kitchen sink. So it could be without a yellow horn.
Okay.
I'm not sure what you substantiated or not.
Okay. All right, thank you. Dr. Bennett, do you have any questions for Dr. DeWolf?
I'm sorry, were you asking me? Yes. Yes, thank you. Dr. DeWolf, you've made a couple of comments today and also in the dialogue that I read in your record about how insurance companies don't cover what they're supposed to, and that was the reason why you were forced to pass these costs on to your patients based upon the idea that you can't be in business and pay your business expenses without collecting money for these. And the issue that I have here is I'm looking at what billing records we do have, and we do not have treatment records to compare, but when I look at 2 hours of physical therapy at $800, I really question the medical necessity of this. And So my question to you is, and I see this very routinely as a routine course of treatment on the multiple patient records that I did have the opportunity to look at and tweak in terms of billing. And so is it your contention that routinely 2 hours of physical therapy is medically necessary for the average chiropractic patient?
I don't know what Dr. Doty and Dr. Blonda decided that the patient care should be. I wasn't involved in that. So I'm assuming Dr. Goldsworthy, the PT, if they decided that 2 hours was necessary, I would hope that it was. But again, I was not involved in that in any way, shape, or form.
Okay, but you do understand your responsibility. I mean, you are a doctor of chiropractic, and you give issue bills to patients and sought to collect money from those patients based upon the IA and made the statement that insurance companies aren't paying what they're supposed to. And I have a problem with that because insurance are not supposed to pay for care that is not medically necessary. And when I see a billing profile where all of these patients are receiving with clearly excessive care, excessive fees notwithstanding, then as the person who is collecting this money, does it not seem appropriate that you would be aware of that and be responsible for that as well?
Well, when I did become aware of it, they had already seen the patient. And typically, if I recall, when I was trying to get the billing company to adjust things up, I was adjusting it down to what the reasonable and customary amount that the insurance company would have paid for that day. I don't know however many units were billed that day of care. And most of the patients, when I originally sent them bills, I reduced them down substantially just, to make it easier and because of all the chaos and confusion. But ultimately, when I was sending patients bills, it wasn't under the context of a chiropractor, it was the context of an entrepreneur, as a capitalist, as a business owner, which anyone can be. You don't have to be a chiropractor for that. So I was not working in the capacity of a chiropractor. Did that answer your question?
Dr. Bennett, did you hear all that?
I'm hearing garbled, but I got the essence of it. And so what I understand the answer to be is that Dr. Wolf does not consider herself to be responsible or fact of billing for medically unnecessary care when I believe that she should, and I believe that's a major concern. And with that, I have no further questions.
Okay. I have a follow-up question. So there was an allegation relating to durable medical equipment.
This call is now being recorded.
That was sent out, and so the patient would get a 10 unit, let's say. I believe the company was Summit Medical Exchange name at some point. And then the patient thought they were not going to owe any money for that based on a verbal agreement. Probably Dr. Doty. And then when the checks came in, checks were paid to your clinic and were deposited. The allegation was that money was owed to the durable medical equipment company, which ultimately then sounds like they balanced those patients a lot of money for attendance. Do you know anything about this?
I wasn't involved in that, but I can speculate that if insurance, if the patient brought in a check from her insurance company, it was applied toward her balance. And I know this patient did have a large balance of outstanding checks owed to us from her insurance company. So, what likely happened was you just applied toward the balance. And I don't know what the arrangement was. I didn't know about any spending money off to the DME company. That sounds like.
Okay. Well, with that, we likely have some of the complainants that are nearby and want to speak to some of these issues and have their voices be heard. So let's go ahead and start with case number 2018-030, which is a patient with initials meeting. Station TV. If you are joining, you are muted and we cannot hear you. So I'm going to call out one more time. Station TV for case 2018-0. Oh, I'm sorry. Case 031. 2018-031. Okay. Hearing none with that, let's move on to case number 2018032, patient with initials D as in David, last name Ellis and Leonard. DL, are you present? One more call out to DL for case 2018032. Okay, how about case number 2018-040, complainant with the initial J, D. J is in John, D is in David. Are you present? If you want to speak, now is your chance. One more call to JD. Okay, another case, 2018-044, complainant with the initial D, M. E is in Aaron, M is in Mary. Are you present? One more call to EM. Okay, last call to EM. Okay.
Okay, Dr. Kuhn. Are you currently licensed?
I'm in default for not doing my PMEs the past couple of years. A lot of financial struggle going through all of this, and I can barely afford to cover the overhead for my children, especially not receiving the child support payments that we're owed to. So I didn't have the money to do it, and it wasn't a priority to me because I wasn't practicing anything.
Do you have plans to try to renew or bring that up this week in 2020?
Actually, I do. my husband's a medical doctor, and we're talking about joining forces and doing something once the baby's in the world.
You would like to get your chiropractic license back and be active status where you can practice chiropractic?
Yeah, ultimately, it's always an option.
Okay. Board members, any further questions? Okay. And then, Ms. DeWolf, Dr. DeWolf, do you have anything you would like to say in closing before we enter into deliberations? Once we go into deliberations, we don't really talk to you anymore until we don't get your input anymore. This is your last chance to go ahead and tell us what you want to say.
I'm just going to reiterate that I feel as though it's kind of a moot point because I didn't actually pursue any of these people. I felt a heartache for them, for me. It was just toxic, and I was not involved in a lot of it. I knew I should have been more, and I tried to be with my ex, but then going through the divorce and the separation and everything, it created a situation where there wasn't a lot of collaboration until I had to force it. So, you know what, that was bad on me, but I was dealing a lot with the kids and, you know, just overseeing the HR issues and whatnot. In hindsight, I should have gotten more involved. But again, I'm human, and I shied away from everything that was toxic because that's what I did.
Okay.
All right.
So you are not interested in voluntarily surrendering your license at this point. You want to continue to keep your license active and just have the board go ahead and proceed with whatever we think needs to be done with this matter. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right, board members, let's deliberate. We're in a formal interview. We can take all of our regular options for disciplinary action or non-disciplinary. We just can't revoke the license here. If you felt like it needed to be revoked, we would go to a formal hearing and we would move forward. I feel like we don't have all the information yet to make a decision because we didn't have a response to the subpoena that was appropriate. We didn't have the patient records to match up to the billing. I feel like we should get that information and continue the investigation, which could be in the form of another formal interview or any venue of your pleasure. But it's not about me. What do you guys think?
Chair, board members, we think there would be more information. I think the appropriate thing to do is to bring it back to the investigation to receive those materials, and then at that time, we can work on the stuff.
Okay. First one is Zion. Anybody want to make a motion to that effect or otherwise?
Just to clarify, Mr. Monahan, that would go back to the initial action.
Yes.
Yeah. To continue to gather more information, and then if there's new information that we feel needs additional action, we would then move to the formal review at that point.
Absolutely. Mr. Durbinson, you look perplexed. I like that.
I mean, just being cognizant of how long this has been open.
I agree. I think.
Go ahead and say your name for the router. When they go back into the audio, they may not know the difference.
This is Dr. Knopf. There was a lot of separation between the practice and the clinic and delivery of care in this case. I know that owners are responsible for billing, and I don't know, in this case, when she stepped in and she tried to do the right thing with the third party, to do peanut butter spread on the AR books, and we got a couple of patients that unfortunately got hung up in that approach. It would be hard to know, looking at documentation, what was necessary or not, because she wasn't there with the patients who wasn't providing the care, the examination, or evaluation. So it's definitely a tricky spot. I would like to move a little more quickly than having to go back to the initial complaint stage again, and then looking at all the information that we have at that point. I don't know that it'll change our direction.
Well, an option would be to continue it to a formal interview again, correct? And then we can take disciplinary action if needed at that point with any additional information that we receive.
Chair, board members, it would be unfortunate if we're not asking for testimony, we're looking for actual documentation or our factual questions that can be remain with that.
Excuse me, even if additional information is going to change anything, what is the additional information we get? The patient's records, we would know if care was medically necessary, we would know if there's fraudulent noise. We don't already know the answer to those questions. To take it back that far seems like a big step back.
Well, that's up to you.
Dr. Bennett?
Yeah, sorry, I had to unmute. I feel as though I'm sympathetic to the expediency issue. However, I also think that we need the facts, and so my inclination is to move forward to a formal interview process or formal hearing, whatever the next step is, with the requirement that we get these treatment records. While I'm sympathetic to the circumstances of Dr. DeWolf having to step in, I also I've read her correspondence with some of these patients, and it just doesn't fly with me to charge high fees, very high fees, for overutilization, and then tell the patient that the insurance companies aren't paying for the care that they're supposed to be paying for. And that's That's unethical if it's happening, and it does mandate disciplinary action, and I believe that we need to get the information to confirm whether or not that occurred.
Okay. And so, Mr. Monahan suggested if we want that we go back to an initial action phase and be specific with the information that we want to request, to start with complying with the subpoena and all the records that were already requested. My concern is part of the reason why this took so long is we haven't had a lot of cooperation up until this point. You know, we've had going back to something as simple as having the right address. That's supposed to be part of the deal when you renew your license every year. You're supposed to give us an address that we can contact you at. And so, if a motion is made to continue the investigation, I wonder if you also want to give Dr. Dibble another option to surrender her license if she decides she doesn't want to comply with this after the meeting. And we don't have to do that. You know, if you really want the records, you know, you just request the records and continue the investigation. So, does anybody want to make a motion?
This is Dr. Bennett again, and I don't necessarily want to make the motion, but I also had made a note to myself that some kind of timeliness contingency should be placed on whatever further action we take if we didn't terminate the case today. And I think that your suggestion, Dr. Garino, is good to provide the option of surrendering the license as an option. So I would support someone else's motion in that direction for something similar to it.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll go ahead and make the motion then to refer back to initial action investigation. Dr. DeWolf needs to comply with the original subpoena for all of the records and the information that we wanted. We'll revisit this within, let's say, two meetings. So by the February meeting, and if we don't have compliance with that at that point, we can go to formal hearing.
Chair and members of the board, that's why February has not been a scheduled board meeting on this meeting. But
okay. All right, within the next quarter. So that's my motion, and also give Mr. Monahan authority to draft a consent to surrender license if she doesn't comply with that. Is there a second? Okay, we have a first and a second, and some comments. Any further discussion?
Mr. Turbinson, is there a way that we can maybe more formalize Dr. Knopf's request for the communication with Dr. Doty that Dr. DeWolf said she would, to the extent that what I'm trying to subpoena, to at least maybe issue a new subpoena or a supplemental subpoena on that?
Okay, that's a friendly amendment to my first, is that a friendly to the second?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, hearing none, the motion carries. So, Dr. DeWolf, what we've decided to do today is refer back to initial action, so you'll be contacted by staff in the upcoming days with the requirements of what we need from you and what we need in the future. Okay. If you have any questions, you can call our executive director on another day, and that will conclude the formal interview for today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. The time now is 10:32. Does anybody need a quick break? Okay.
Five.
We'll take five, and we'll be back by, let's say, we'll be back by 10:40. 7 minutes.
Equipment.
that was sent out. And so a patient would get a 10 unit, let's say. I believe the company was Summit Medical, which changed names at some point. And then the patient thought they were not going to owe any money for that, based on a verbal agreement with probably Dr. Doty. And then when the checks came in, checks were paid to your clinic and were deposited. That was the allegation, was that that money was owed to the Durable Medical Equipment Company, which ultimately then sounds like they balanced, billed the patient a lot of money for a 10th unit. Do you know anything about this?
I wasn't involved in that, but I can speculate that if insurance, like if the patient brought in a check from her insurance company, it was applied toward her balance. And I know the patient did have a large balance outstanding check owed to us from her insurance company. So, I mean, the way what likely happened was we just applied toward the balance, and I don't know what the original was. I didn't know about any spending money off to the VMA company. That sounds like interesting.
Okay. Well, with that, we likely have some of the complainants that are nearby and want to speak to some of these issues and have their voices be heard. So let's go ahead and start with case number 2018-030, which is a patient with the initial C. Is it Pat? D is in David. Are you joining this meeting? Patient CD. If you are joining, you are muted and we cannot hear you. So I'm going to call out one more time. Patient CD for case 2018-031, 2018-031. Patient CD. Okay. Hearing none with that, let's move on to case number 2018-032, patient with initials C as in David, last name L as in Leonard. BL, are you present? One more call out to DL for case 2018-032. Okay, how about case number 2018-040, complainant with the initial JD. J as in John, D as in David, are you present? If you want to speak, now is your chance. One more call to JD. Okay, another case, 2018-044, complaining with the initials E, M. E is in Aaron, M is in Mary. Are you present? One more call to EM. Okay, last call to EM. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I've got some follow-up questions.
Okay, Dr. Knopf.
Dr. DeWolf, are you're currently licensed, actively licensed in Arizona practice?
I'm in default for not doing my CME test here. A lot of financial trouble going through all this, and I'm fairly worried that cover the overhead for my children, especially not losing the top of the I didn't have the money to do it, and it wasn't a priority to me because it wasn't that
priority. Right. And do you have plans to try to renew or bring that up to speed in 2022?
Actually, I do. my husband's a medical doctor, and we were talking about joining forces or something once it is
available. So you would like to get your chiropractic license back into an active status where you can practice chiropractic off the physical.
Okay. Board members, any further questions?
No questions.
Okay. And then Ms. DeWolf, Dr. DeWolf, Do you have anything you would like to say in closing before we enter into deliberations? Once we go into deliberations, we don't really talk to you anymore, and so we don't get your input anymore. This is your last chance to go ahead and tell us what you want to say.
I'm just going to reiterate that I feel as though it kind of moved forward because I didn't actually pursue any of these people. I felt a heartache for them, for me. It was just toxic, and I was not involved in a lot of it. I knew I should have been more, and I tried to with my ex, but then going through the divorce and separation and everything, it created a situation where there wasn't a lot of cooperation until I had to force it. So, you know what, that was bad for me, but I was dealing with a lot with the kids and, you know, just overseeing the HR issues and whatnot. In hindsight, I should have gotten more help. But again, I'm human and I shy away from everything that was possible.
Okay. All right. So you are not interested in voluntarily surrendering your license at this point. Do you want to continue to keep your license active and just have the board go ahead and proceed with whatever we think needs to be done with this matter? Is that correct? Okay. All right, board members, let's deliberate. We're in a formal interview. We can take all of our regular options for disciplinary action or non-disciplinary. We just can't revoke the license here. If you felt like it needed to be revoked, we would go to formal hearing and we would move the meeting forward. I feel like we don't have all the information yet to make a decision because we didn't have a response to the subpoena that was appropriate. We didn't have the patient records to match up to the billing. I feel like we should get that information and continue the investigation, which could be in the form of another formal interview or any venue of your pleasure. But it's not about me. What do you guys think?
Chair, board members, if we think that we need more information, I think the appropriate thing to do would be to remand it back to investigation to receive those materials, and then at that time the board can discuss those materials as it wants to.
Okay. First to Mr. Maya. Does anybody want to make a motion to that effect or otherwise?
Just to clarify, Mr. Maya, that would go back to initial action.
Then,
to continue to gather more information, and then if there's new information that we feel needs additional action, we would then move into formal interview at that point.
Okay. Absolutely.
Mr. Turbinson, you look perplexed. I like that.
I mean, just being cognizant of how long this has been open.
I agree. I think.
Go ahead and say your name for the record, because when they go back and hear the audio, they may not know the difference between the two.
Yeah, we like the name too. This is Dr. Knopf. There was a lot of separation between the practice and the clinic and delivery of care. In this case, I know that owners are responsible for billing, and I don't know, in this case, when she stepped in, if she tried to do the right thing with the third party and do a peanut butter spread on the AR books, and we got a couple of patients that unfortunately got hung up in that approach. I believe her credit, it would be hard to know, looking at documentation, what was necessary or not, because she wasn't there with the patient. She wasn't providing the care, doing the examinations or evaluations. So it's definitely a tricky spot. I would like to move a little more quickly than having to go back to the initial complaint stage again and then looking at all the information that we have at that point. I don't know that it'll change our direction substantially.
I agree.
Well, an option would be to continue it to a formal interview again, correct? And then we can take disciplinary action if needed at that point with any additional information that we receive.
Chair, board members, it would be unfortunately that we're not asking for testimony. We're looking for actual documentation to support our factual findings. But it'd be more prudent to move it back to remain back to initial review.
Okay.
excuse me, even with additional information, is it going to change anything? What is, excuse me, the additional information we would gain? The patient's records, we would know if the care was medically necessary. We would know if there is fraudulent billing. I think we already know the answer to those questions. To take it back that far seems like a big step back.
Well, and that's up to you. Dr. Bennett, I mean, any thoughts from you? Dr. Bennett?
Yeah, sorry, I had to unmute. I feel as though I'm sympathetic to the expediency issue. However, I also think that we need the facts, and so my inclination is to move forward to a formal interview process or formal hearing, whatever the next step is, with the requirement that we get these treatment records. While I'm sympathetic to the circumstances of Dr. DeWolf having to step in, I also have read her correspondence with some of these patients, and it just doesn't fly with me to charge high fees, very high fees, for overutilization, and then tell the patient that the insurance companies aren't paying for the care that they're supposed to be paying for. And that's unethical if it's happening, and it does mandate disciplinary action, and I believe that we need to get the information to confirm whether or not that occurred.
Okay. And so Mr. Mayan suggested if we want that we go back to an initial action phase and be specific with the information that we want to request, which could start with complying with the subpoena and all the records that were already requested. My concern is part of the reason why this took so long is we haven't had a lot of cooperation up until this point. You know, we've been going back to something as simple as having the right address that's supposed to be part of the deal when you renew your license every year, and you're supposed to give us an address that we can contact you at. And so, if a motion is made to continue the investigation, I wonder if you also want to give Dr. DeWolf another option to surrender her license if she decides she doesn't want to comply with this after the meeting. And we don't have to do that. You know, if you really want the records, you know, we request the records to continue the investigation. So, does anybody want to make a motion?
This is Dr. Bennett again, and I don't necessarily want to make the motion, but I also had made a note to myself that some kind of timeliness contingency should be placed on whatever further action we take if we didn't terminate the case today. And I think that your suggestion, Dr. Garino, is good, to provide the option of surrendering the license as an option. So I would support someone else's motion in that direction or something similar to it.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll go ahead and make the motion then to revert back to initial action investigation. Dr. DeWolf needs to comply with the original subpoena for all of the records and the information that we wanted. We'll revisit this within, let's say, two meetings. So by the February meeting, and if we don't have compliance with that at that point, we can go to formal hearing.
Chair and members of the board, that's why February has not been a scheduled board meeting unless we discuss that plan for February.
All right, within the next quarter. So that's my motion, and also give Mr. Monahan authority to draft a consent to surrender license if she doesn't want to comply with that. Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
Okay, we have a first and a second and some gathering by telemarketers. Any further discussion?
This is Mr. Turbinson. Is there a way that we can maybe more formalize Dr. Knopf's request for the communications with Dr. Doty that Dr. DeVolt said she would, to the extent that wasn't part of the subpoena, to at least maybe issue a new subpoena or a supplemental subpoena on that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's important to ask that, right?
Okay, that's a friendly amendment to my first. Is that a friendly to the second?
Yes.
Okay. All right, I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the motion carries. So, Dr. DeVolt, what we've decided to do today is revert back to initial action, so you'll be contacted by staff in the upcoming days with the requirements of what we need from you, and we'll see in the future. Okay. If you have any questions, you can call our executive director on another day, and that will conclude the formal interview for today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. The time now is 10:32. Does anybody need a quick break? Okay.
5 minutes.
We'll take five, and we'll be back by, let's say, we'll be back by 10:42. All right, the time is now 10:41. We're back from a much-needed break. And we're going to move on to tab number three, which is also a formal interview in the matter of Dr. Richard Matera. And I'm going to call out to Dr. Matera or his counsel if he has one. Dr. Matera, are you present?
Counsel did indicate that she had not been able to get a hold of him.
Okay. So I should start the formal interview and then we'll make a decision. Okay. This is Dr. Richard Guarino. This is the time and place for formal interview in the matter of Dr. Richard Matera. Case number 2021-013 and also case number 2018-043. Matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to it by ARS 32-924F. Dr. Matera, if you are here, go ahead and introduce yourself. Dr. Matera, if you are present, you are muted and we cannot hear you. Okay. So, board members, we don't have Dr. Matera, and my recommendation would be that we move to formal hearing.
I'll make the motion. This is Dr. Knopf to move to formal hearing.
I second the motion. Angela Powell.
And board members, is that based on the potential violations of law and the factual allegations that were contained in the formal interview notice?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, I'll call for the question. Those in favor of moving this to formal hearing, signify by saying aye.
I'm in roll call.
That's a roll call vote.
Ms. Angela Powell?
Aye. Angela Powell.
Dr. Bennett?
Dr. Bennett, aye.
Dr. Knopf?
Aye.
Mr. Turbinson?
Aye.
And Chair Dr. Guarino?
Aye. Okay, so we have a unanimous decision to move to formal hearing, and that will conclude our formal interview for today. Thank you. Okay, next on our agenda, we're going to move to tab number four, which is a matter of Dr. Karen Peterson. Case number 2022-015. Have a seat. Thank you. Go ahead and give us the board brief, Dr. Nayeri.
Yes, sir. In the matter of Dr. Karen Peterson, allegations of not reporting action or investigation in another jurisdiction, violation of board order, non-renewal of chiropractic license, non-compliance with continuing education, failure to provide information to the board, and unprofessional conduct.
Hi, Dr. Peterson. Can you introduce yourself to the record? We don't have mics anymore. That's okay, but you can introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Karen Peterson.
Hi, and you're represented by counsel today.
Yes.
Hi, can you introduce yourself?
Of course, Chair Guarino, members of the board, Clinton Carey, counsel for Dr. Peterson.
Okay, what do you say to the allegation?
Well, may I be heard briefly, Chair Guarino?
Yes.
I wanted to start by reiterating what we had said in our letter to the board, is that we want to try to find a collaborative way to resolve this. She's not been practicing for years, and in around 2017, it appears that her former attorneys and Mr. Bohol, your former ED, did reach some kind of agreement for all intents and purposes, appeared to have told her requirements. This was restated in 2018 by her subsequent attorney, Mr. Bohol, and I have not seen any material that says that, you know, the board staff were objecting to that. And I think what's important is there's a formal interview that was talked about in February of 2017, 4 years ago, and that was never set. And so I think that that is also evident, the fact that the board has never returned to this matter and set it for a formal, is evidence that the agreement essentially didn't hold. In regards to the nursing board complaint, unlike some of the boards like the Behavioral Health Board and some of the boards in other states, there's no actual direct obligation under the law for a licensee to tell the board about discipline by another board. She does have an obligation on the application or reapplication to do it there. I have not seen the 2019 or 2020 applications, both to confirm the timing and also to confirm what she stated in those. What I would note is in her most recent application, which was a reinstatement app that she sent to Ms. Shapiro, which ultimately made its way to your executive director, she did a full disclosure. In addition, when Ms. Kennel raised a concern about her CEUs, she did yesterday or the day before provide 24 more hours of continuing education picked directly off the list. So this is someone who is not practicing, simply holding a license because she respects the license and also, you know, it stands for the education and time that she has spent. What we're looking to do is find a way to allow her to continue in the holding pattern essentially that she's been in, which is continuing to pay her dues, continuing to carry that license, but not practicing, and giving the board notice and ample time to come back and reconvene prior to putting herself back into practice. I think the reality is that she has no current plan for practice, but I think that a solution that would allow her to keep the license and then give perhaps notice to the board or designee, in this case the executive director, so that the executive director could then agendize the matter, would accomplish what needs to be done here. I think the issue here is that there's no harm to the public. She hasn't been treating anyone. This isn't our unlicensed practitioner case that we sometimes get in front of this board and others. There appears to have been an agreement between counsel and Mr. Bohol to hold all the requirements under the consent. And I think it makes sense for there to be the status quo, to try to maintain the status quo. I think we have to go forward to a hearing, whether that's an interview or a formal hearing. We are going to have to contend with the fact that there was a formal interview that never happened 4 years ago, evidence of an agreement between board and staff, and Dr. Peterson's appropriate reliance on the lack of activity for the last 4 years. And so I started my letter with the discussion of wanting to be collaborative, and I think that using this informal setting today is the right way to have that exchange. And I maintain that. I'm not here to, you know, throw punches or to be aggressive about this case. That's just such an odd outlier from what we're normally dealing with in front of this board. So, respectfully, we are open to questions and discussion. We also are happy to try to collaborate, work towards something that could give Mr. Monahan, Dr. Nayari, and me some marching orders that might look like a potentially revised consent agreement or something along those lines.
Okay, thank you. So you're aware that if there's a board order, that the board is the one that has to change the order. That is not something that a staff member would have any ability to do. So do you have evidence of any written communication or anything that you're saying Mr. Bohal altered the agreement somehow or told her that she is not held to the requirement that the original board order required?
We have back-to-back communications from 2017 to 2018 where the lawyers from Dr. Peterson sent communications directly to Mr. Bohal, setting forth their understanding of whatever handshake agreement occurred. My issue is this, is that it is not that I think I'm not trying to supplant the board's authority. However, there is an equitable element here, which is when someone who wears the mantle of the executive director either makes an agreement, which I believe happened, or fails to take action for an extended period, I do think it creates a reliance on and the licensee is permitted to rely on that. And I think that's the hard part here is is there good execution in this situation? There's not. I mean, what should have happened is it should have been brought back in front of the board, and the board should have been able to then be permitted to do whatever it chose to do. For some reason, this languished for 4 years, and because of that, I think there's an equity element to it. I'm certainly not trying to supplant your authority. I mean, you have the authority here. It's more of stuff happened within the board staff, and I think it does. I think the board should consider that. And I do think under Arizona law, there's some equitable remedies that Dr. Peterson does have because of the delay. And the law does recognize what's called equitable estoppel, which is essentially if there is an inaction for an extended period of time, the status quo does become the status, unfortunately. So that's where I'm coming from. It's not a matter of what you can and can't do. It's a matter of the situation I think we all find ourselves in, which is we have a case where someone has been doing her continuing education, paying her dues for this year, and is not practicing. And so I think the idea is, rather than, you know, trying to determine whose authority is where, maybe we can work towards a resolution.
Okay. I'm going to make a motion that we enter into executive session to consult Mr. Monahan regarding equitable estoppel and other issues relating. So that's my motion. Is there a second?
I second the motion.
Okay. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay. Hearing none, you stay here. We're going to go to our executive session room. The time right now is 10:53, and Dr. Bennett, you're going to need to get yourself to a secure room where no one else can hear you.
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
And that we would know when you were able to physically practice or not, which you did, and you provided us with a lot of reports over the years. And in the meantime, you got your RN degree, and then you got an MD degree, and but you were able to work as a nurse practitioner for several years. And continue to keep your chiropractic license in tandem, even though you weren't actively practicing. And so, so you knew the renewal process. You know, you renewed every year for, I think, over 20 years. And then you stopped renewing a couple of years ago, right around the same time when you were under investigation by the nursing board. And that looks like an intentional act of omission to me. It looks like you knew that it would reflect poorly on your chiropractic license, and there is a duty to renew your license every year for the board order. And it specifically asks if you're under investigation by any other board. So the fact that the nursing board, that you didn't have to report or answer to them regarding maybe your board order with us, does not put you in the clear for not reporting to us that you were under an investigation from the nursing board, which ultimately found you dangerous to the point where they summarily suspended your license with the nursing board. They didn't go through the normal channels to take away your license. They, because of your prescribing habits and the things that were done, decided you were dangerous enough that they summarily suspended you. And that happened, and we still didn't report that to us. And so I'm asking the question to myself, if I had a new applicant that said to me, I just got summarily suspended from the nursing board because they thought I was a dangerous person, can I have a chiropractic license? I would be a no vote. That's just me. I would say, no, you can apply to other states, but that doesn't meet the standard in Arizona for patient safety. That is our job to protect the public. So here we are now with if Mr. Vohall made any kind of agreement or not with you, and I don't have any evidence that he did, he doesn't have the authority to alter your board order. You're in violation of a board order. The quarterly requirements didn't happen. You didn't apply for your license in the last couple of years, and so now you're saying that, you know, you want your license back and you're probably not going to practice, and it seems odd to me. So go ahead and tell me.
He was not merely suspended. That is simply incorrect. I was a lawyer on the nursing board case. There's no summary suspension. What happens is the nursing board has a tendency to very heavily use the summary suspension power. That's really not the topic of this, but it uses summary suspension power very aggressively. I negotiated that case, and we reached a resolution on that simply required her to put her practice on pause while she completed a course of education. And then when she completed that course of education, her status reverted to a probation status. And so she was not summarily suspended. This was an agreement that the parties reached between the nursing board and Dr. Peterson on the nursing board side of the house. So there was not a summary suspension, and the board never ultimately made finding a fact that she posed a danger sufficient to require a summary suspension. Also, the only non-renewal that I have listed is for the renewal of 2021. I don't have prior failures to renew. And so, you know, I know we're in the initial interview stage, so we don't have the benefit of Ms. Kettle's complete packet of materials, but I'm not aware of other instances in which she failed to renew. And so...
Okay, well, let's talk about that. So why didn't she renew for 2021 when she was, according to our records, summarily suspended in the previous year?
Well, she wasn't summarily suspended. She wasn't summarily suspended. And according to your records, she was merely suspended by the Cairo board?
By the nursing board.
Okay. So just to go back, if the board were to look at our
text... Can you please answer my question? Why didn't she apply for her license for 2021?
I'll let her answer that.
Okay.
Actually, I was in the process of completing all of my CDUs for the nursing board. And it was one of those things that I... actually was so wrapped up in getting all of these CEUs done, and there were about 200 CEUs, and I actually thought that I had renewed, and as you see, I didn't every year for many years, so this was the only year that I just, it was not something that I did on purpose. It was something I simply just didn't, I failed to do it because I didn't, I actually generally get a reminder, and I didn't get a reminder this year.
Well, okay, so you renewed your license for over 20 years, and you knew that the end of the year it's time to renew your license, and you're telling me because you didn't get a reminder, maybe you didn't renew your license that year.
I just completely was so wrapped up in doing CEUs for the nursing board, and that was really sort of where my head was that I completely forgot, because it was not on purpose that I did not renew.
Okay, so didn't you think that we would want to know? You've answered the question on the application for all those previous years. Are you under investigation by any other board? And do you see the timing of this and how it looks bad in the year that you're having trouble and being investigated by the nursing board that you forget to renew your license with the chiropractic board?
Well,
It actually did not cross my mind because of the fact that I knew that when I completed my CEUs, I could practice without having the A license. They don't feel that I'm a danger. Originally they said she feels she's a danger if she doesn't do this. So let me have this because what I would say is you have a reinstatement provision in your statute. Other boards do not have a reinstatement provision. For instance, in the Board of Behavioral Health, if you lapse by more than 3 months and a day, you have to do a full brand new application. For whatever legislative reason, the DC board has decided that it will have a reinstatement. And so while her reinstatement and attempt to seek relicensure is late, and she has provided all the reinstatement materials to board staff, she has reapplied for her license. And so the idea that she's not in compliance, your statutes give her the opportunity to renew late. She used it. As soon as the non-renewal was brought to her attention by Ms. Kennel, she went through the process of submitting a reinstatement packet. She had submitted everything she required for that. We had a discussion among Mr. Monahan and I about providing that to board staff. And so if the board were to take action today, you could also consider a reinstatement at that time. But the packet is there. And so you do have, this is essentially a late renewal. And in that late renewal, she made a full disclosure. It described exactly what the issues were, and it does comply with your statute. So I understand it's late, and I understand that the board has concerns about the timing, but to say that it was without evidence an intentional decision to not provide the board information, I think the bridge too far. I think what you can say is she has submitted it. She's used your framework that you statutorily, that the legislature has said this board will use for reinstatement. And so she is in compliance by submitting a reinstatement package.
Okay. So I am looking at an emergency order from the nursing board. Board members, I'm looking at page 62 of 63. And it says at the very bottom, it says, it is therefore ordered and effective immediately that Karen Thompson Peterson, the holder of registered nurse license number, et cetera, is summarily suspended pending proceedings for revocation and other by the board. Are you telling me that something happened since then that you...
Is that a signed order at the bottom? Because that would be...
It is not signed.
Yes, that's a submitted packet by Ms. Reidenauer, or by Beth Campbell, who is the AG, and
okay.
Ms. Reidenauer. What actually was executed was a consent agreement that is dated the same day. And what it says is she would be on a... it's a state revocation. Her license was not taken and stayed to give her an opportunity to complete programming. So that order is typically has to be issued. I think it's shipments is like 3 days or within 24 hours. Earlier than 24 hours, they have to file essentially a notice of charges or a notice for summary suspension because it gets around the public notice requirement. It's as soon as practicable before a meeting. And then we negotiated a consent agreement. So I think what you may have, if it was provided by the nursing board, that is a public document, but it is part of the investigative packet. That was never executed. Did I get that right?
Yeah. Yeah, the revocation of license, state revocation and probation of license was 12/28/20.
Okay. All right. So, board members. We'll start with Ms. Powell. Do you have any questions for Dr. Peterson?
Not at this time. Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Bennett?
No, not at this. Sorry. No, I do not at this time.
Okay. Dr. Knopf?
Yeah, Dr. Peterson, at this point, because there was obviously confusion around suspension or probation for your nursing license, what is the standing of your current nursing license? Is it active?
It's active.
It's currently active.
Probation. It's probationary active.
Probation.
For 24 months.
and then get COVID.
Okay, and then 24 months would have started right after when this initial document that we have
when I'm working
was submitted.
Actually, I can speak. Do you want me to speak to that? Sure. So she had a period of time, not to exceed 12 months, where she had to complete some educational requirements. So she's on a status, I don't know if you have the status, called state revocation suspension. She was on that status, completed her requirements, then it switches to state revocation probation. They have a practice requirement in front of that board where if you're given a 2-year, for instance, you have to log typically, I want to say 16 months of that 24 months where you have to have actual practice or it moves in perpetuity. So when she will happen, is she will, once she logs her set number of months of nursing practice or NP practice, then that clock will start running and then it can be completed once she has shown that level of practice.
Okay. So are you currently in that stage where you are practicing and the clock is ticking on that? Or
she's in the stage of being on probation, so anything that's under the probation agreement she has to do,
yep.
Her work, actual hands-on nursing has not started yet, and so she'll remain in this probation status until she starts logging that time.
Got it. Similar to what seems like an indefinite probation with the chiropractic license. We're just kind of stuck in a period of limbo. So just so I get this right and accurate, the statement was made that there was no renewal done to have a chiropractic license in 2020, right? That was just forgotten about in the midst of all the...
It wasn't. I know that's not a very good excuse, and I see that as being something that would be like, what are you doing?
Sure.
It was overwhelming for me.
For the period of 2020, if you're to be practicing, 2020, 2019, you did go through the renewal process for those years. Is your recollection?
Yes.
Okay. That's all the questions. Actually, no. Part of the probationary order for the chiropractic board was to submit these quarterly disability reports, and they seem to have dropped off. Is there a reason for that?
Yes, we had a meeting. We actually had a meeting in front of the board. And can you explain how they discussed it, and then they didn't follow up on it? And then they told me that I didn't have to do that anymore.
When was that meeting?
It was set for February 15th, 2017. At February meeting, licensee stated she had surgery on her back and could not return to practice, probably will not return to practice in the future. She continued to state she's proud of her license and not going to give it off. And then at that time, your predecessor then voted to move it to a formal. That was that February 2017 meeting. That never occurred. And then the March 2nd, there was a discussion between Ms. Romano and Justin Bohal about placing her into some form of retired status where she could continue to take CEUs and keep her license active but not practice under it. And there was negotiations between the parties. Then Mr. Bohal stopped responding. Then on June 8th, 2017, Ms. Romano sent another letter. And then a year later, Mr. Stouders, who was her subsequent attorney, sent a confirming letter in June of that year telling Justin that he was going to close out the file because it appears that whatever agreement had been reached between Ms. Romano and Mr. Bohal did not require any further action from him as the attorney.
Okay, so the foundation the report stopped because there was the thinking that this was going to a formal interview, and so that wasn't going to be the case.
If you want my opinion as to what happened, is the board attempted to set it for a formal or indicated it wanted to set for a formal, and what I believe happened just from my experience being an admin lawyer is my guess is Justin and Ms. Romano were negotiating in some way, and I don't know internally what happened. It never got set. And I think the idea was the board, and this is pretty common in front of a lot of boards, is the board will do something like set a formal of some sort with the idea that the board staff and the attorney or the board staff and the licensee will negotiate something and then come back to the board with a new consent agreement.
Okay.
And, you know, that is certainly something that we could propose here as well, as a way to somewhat resolve some of these issues is, you know, you could take whatever interim action you want to take, but we could certainly go back to our respective, you know, respective meeting and try to sort this one out just because of some of the procedural issues.
All right. I've got no further questions. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Turbinson.
Yeah, so what year was it that you didn't renew? That was in 2019 for your 2020 license?
No, I didn't renew for this. I believe she has renewed for 2021. That was when I was working on that.
And you did timely submit for the 2020 license?
Yes.
You did. Okay.
I believe the issue wasn't on timeliness. I believe it was the CE issue, wasn't it?
Okay.
The 2020 renewal?
No.
Okay. I don't have any further questions.
Okay. Dr. Bennett, any more questions?
Yes. I'm sorry. I have to do this meeting thing. There was an issue of a $500 fine that was deferred and then would become payable in the event that there was a lack of compliance. And I'd like to know what the status of that is.
So I believe he's speaking about the board order from 2010. That there was a fee, a fine that was going to be stayed unless there was a violation of the board order, and then it becomes payable. Is that correct, Dr. Bennett?
Yes. Yeah. And it would appear that there was a violation of the board order, and so is it still payable? Was it paid? What's the story?
The question, is it still payable? I think that's potentially illegal. Opinion. I don't want to render legal advice as to whether a civil penalty from 2010 is still payable in 2021, given the procedural posture of the case. I would defer to my colleague if he had need to report legal advice on that being owed.
We did not get, to staff knowledge, did the board get paid back that? Or was it ever collected?
We don't have any evidence of that being collected.
Okay, thank you.
And it would be contingent complying with all the orders set forward, which arguably didn't happen.
And it would actually be contingent. The payment would actually be contingent on violation, and if in the event that the respondent violates any term of this order, and there hasn't been a finding by board staff, and there hasn't been any kind of attempt at lifting it by board staff or by the board. So I don't know if this is a right issue yet, because there hasn't been any kind of finding.
Okay, so
I understand.
Okay. Anything else, Dr. Bennett?
No, thank you.
All right, so if I heard you correctly, what you're saying today is that maybe Dr. Peterson unintentionally violated the board order because you thought you were in negotiations with our executive director, who doesn't have the authority to change the board order. And you're saying because it hasn't been enforced in several years that somehow that makes it okay.
I don't take the position that anything is ever okay. I take the position that there is a reliance that Dr. Peterson should be able to have on the form of counsel. And I think that there is a course of conduct that even if there's not equitable estoppel, which honestly would be an issue I will want to take up at some point to the Court of Appeals, because I do think that equitable estoppel is appropriate because reliance has essentially been induced here. But with that said, not that anything's okay. I'm saying that we find ourselves in a situation where we have a licensee who's relying on her counsel to give her advice. We have multiple communications to board staff, what appears to be affirming a agreement that was reached. Whether that was done properly or improperly is out there. And so I think that when the board is considering the equities, we don't have a situation where someone is just running roughshod over their consent agreement. We have a situation where someone is thrown into, I will tell you, one of the most convoluted procedural cases I've had to deal with in front of a board, no fault to the members of the board, but just due to the age. And I think there has to, my hope is that there could be some sort of equity here. If I were in the board's position and you reset it, I think that it would be done with the understanding that you would expect Mr. Monahan and I and Dr. Nayeri to attempt to try to reach a resolution that the board would approve. I think that would be a way that the board could kind of clear the decks here, put her on an agreement where essentially she keeps paying her dues, keeps doing her continuing education, stay on any other issues, and if she decides to come back into practice, she has to give Dr. Nair a notice, and in 30 days you get to have some form of due process hearing with her to address some of these additional issues. I'm just trying to, you know, kind of cut through some of the noise that's been generated just solely because of the age of this and some of the shifts we've had with EDs over the last couple of years. So that's my analysis of it. So I don't think anything's okay here. We're far from okay at this point, but I think we're in a position where we can work it out. We can collaborate in some way that might give everyone a level of comfort.
Okay. So board members, what's your pleasure?
Just real quick, Mr. Chairman, if I may, do we have copies of those applications for license renewal for the previous years, like 17, 18?
We don't have them in our board packet.
Do we know for sure they were completed?
Yeah, we should.
Sure.
Have all
may I get this member all the questions? So in 2018 and 2019, the license was renewed, the application was received, and question number 18 was not answered yet. So it was a failure to answer yes on question number 18.
In the year of 2019, which was the year that she was under investigation for the nursing board.
Yes. What was the date of her application, Dr.
Harry? I don't have her application.
And it wouldn't matter because she was under investigation early in 2019, and then the draft summary suspension was in December.
I think it would matter on when she renewed because she wasn't given notice by Christy. I get her last name now, but Christy over at the board, who's the advanced practice nurse practitioner at the time, did not send out a complaint notice letter until mid-2019. So if she renewed prior to that, then it wouldn't be there.
We don't renew until the
I have to see the date. It's unfortunate, it's a limitation as to the stage we are at, which is I don't have the application in front of me. And she did make a request for that. Be able to review it so that you can prepare it today, but unfortunately I don't have a copy of that.
I did not know that I was under investigation until the end of 2000. So, just for the board hearing.
Okay, and then I don't think we have evidence of your renewal for 2020, and you're saying you renewed for 2020, but we don't see that you did, and we also don't have 2021.
I have a license for 2020.
So you have a printed confirmation maybe that you paid the fee or that it's the actual license. Okay.
As far as the fee, that's a good question because I couldn't put it on a credit card because I did look in my bank account. I didn't see where I did the bank account thing, so it might have been on the credit card. And I got rid of some credit cards. But I do have the license.
Yeah.
That says to me that I did.
Okay. Well,
Karina, from it. Also, in 2020, there was non-compliance with the CE's requirement. The course is 53.6 hours, were completed. However, the courses were not approved by the federal practice board.
Okay.
And as the board sees, she subsequently completed 24 hours, including for her even year, 2 hours of record keeping. So the material she has gone through and has remedied by completing a significant amount of relevant continuing education, which again would put her back into the reinstatement territory.
I saw that there was a lot of continuing ed that was performed, and we do have the material that you submitted regarding that. So, board members, what's your pleasure? If you think that disciplinary action is require if we go to formal interview or formal hearing to revoke, if you think that, you know, continuing the investigation would give Dr. Peterson an opportunity to present her 2020 license that she says that she has, and anything else that we might need. Or we can dispose of it today in a non-disciplinary way. What are your thoughts, and how would you like to proceed?
I think it would be good to see if she's saying that she has a 2020 license. I would like to understand if that was issued in that previous year. I know that doesn't really do anything for years 2021, but I would like to see it if that was issued by her board.
Okay, and then we have the issue of continued non-compliance with the reporting of the disability status.
And answering it correctly on a renewal.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, a formal interview or?
Yeah, I think we gather a little bit more evidence to see if there was a license issued in 2020, and we moved to formal interview to buy that time to see if we can collect that.
And now we also have the supporting documents related to the summary suspension that they negotiated a probationary deal for.
Yeah, correct. Make sure that was the case. We don't have that.
And board members, again, because it's not testimony but documentation, we'd want to hold it at the investigative stage, but we can schedule that again January if you want. It doesn't seem like you need a lot of information.
Yeah, so it would be whatever the signed consent was with the nursing board, documentation of proof of licensure for 2021, or 2020, and then we would just say on initial action.
And I would just note, we did, as part of the reinstatement pact, attach the signed consent agreement that we have reached with the nurse support. And that's in possession of the, it's also available on a system called Nurses, which is the online clearinghouse that hooks in the National Practitioner Data Bank for nurses.
All right. Is there a second to that motion?
Second the motion.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. I want to call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay. We have five ayes that have it. So we're going to continue the investigation. You heard what we need. You'll be contacted from our executive director in writing for additional materials that are necessary, and we'll revisit this at another date.
And Chair Green, we do have one housekeeping item on this matter, which is she did submit a reinstatement packet. And so does the board want to when it's time to reconsider that, simply take the date of her resubmission as the reinstatement request date. So that what I don't want is I don't want to get too far out of reinstatement on this case, because you have the different checkpoints in your reinstatement process that trigger different requirements on your numbers list. So I didn't know if the board would consider the reinstatement as of the date it was submitted. And if so, they could simply just hold it in abeyance until we hash out the consent agreement situation for right now.
Dr. Nairi is going to handle the Juggling Act the best that he can, and he'll agendize it as necessary.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. All right, that concludes for today. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, let's go on to the next tab. Tab number five is a matter of Dr. John Duff. And are you present? All right, come on up. You can have a seat. Introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Dr. John Duff.
Hi, welcome. Dr. Nairi, do you have a word read for us?
Yes, in the matter of Dr. John M. Duff, allegations are patient abandonment, breach of confidentiality, failure to release medical records, non-compliance with court subpoena, unprofessional conduct.
Okay, and do we have the complainant patient with the initials A as in apple, C as in cat? Hi, come on up. You can have a seat. We're only going to refer to you by initials to protect your identity, so you can introduce yourself as AC.
Hi, I'm Steve.
Okay, welcome. Okay, so in this format, we're going to get to the bottom of some of the facts of what happened. You cannot cross-examine each other. You shouldn't talk to each other. You direct your talking through me, the chair, and we'll start with Dr. Duff. What do you say to the allegations?
I say all the allegations are false, with the exception of failure by the reference.
Okay. Board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Duff? And we'll start with Mr. Turbinson.
I have no questions.
Dr. Knopf?
There's a couple of allegations here. I think we'll just talk about one by one just to make sure that we're clear on each of them. You said that you are admitting that you did not release records in a timely manner, patient agency. That's what you're saying definitely happened in this situation.
Correct. Okay. I mean, I was not getting the communication, and so I did not realize, not until the doctor I referred her to requested them from me, and when I contacted them directly, by that time she'd been discharged, and shortly thereafter I received the complaint.
Okay.
But she had made attempts, but I was not getting those attempts.
Well, what did that look like? It seems like you're practicing out of a home office.
Correct.
So for typical records requests, where do those go?
I have a fax machine.
Patients would fax their requests into you?
Correct.
Can they request it when they're seeing you?
They can. And the truth is, there was a verbal request before then. So even though there was technically no written request that I received, there was an agreement when I had referred her out of the practice that we would provide those to her. And then I kind of figured that I would get a request from another colleague, another physician that I referred her to, and that it would make the official transfer at that time. And I did receive that from Arizona Chiropractic Neurology. That's one of the offices that I referred her to. And so I called up to talk to them specifically, because I usually like to talk to the doctor personally, if possible, about the case. And when I did, they told me that she'd already been discharged.
Okay. And so you've since provided records? The requested records?
No, I haven't.
Oh, they still haven't been there. They're with you today.
Correct.
Okay. The other, I guess, allegation in here, excuse me, is obviously working out of a home office, it's a little different than working out of a dedicated clinic space, that there is intrusion at that time, or maybe a lack of privacy and care. Can you just talk to me about what that looks like practicing from home? Is your family in and out of your treatment space? Has that ever happened? If it happens,
when the COVID thing happened and everybody was locked down, from March until August, it was a little bit awkward. But in general, it's a separate room with a separate entrance. And anytime I've got a female patient, I might leave that door open anyway, just like many of our colleagues would have an open type of concept in their practice.
So would it be unusual for your kids or wife to be present or around the treating area or the office space that you use?
It wouldn't be unusual for my wife because she helps, she assists the practice.
Okay.
And she's an employee. She's an unpaid employee.
Okay.
Office manager or whatever. Children, no. That would be more on the rear side.
Right. And then I guess the third allegation that I see here is that patient AC was kicked out of the practice by your wife. Do you have any recollection of that interaction or what that looked like?
Yes. the patient was a very difficult patient as far as her physical problems that she had.
Okay.
She really was sort of beyond me. And I knew that earlier than she ended up leaving. But by that point, we had kind of become a lifeline. she was referred by a really close friend of ours, and she was in a very bad way when she ended in the office. And there's a subset of the population that is very self-educated. They are very into natural medicine. They do not like conventional medicine, maybe sometimes to a fault. And so in her mind, she had pretty much run the gamut already. And so I thought maybe I could help her. And I did help her, but it became evident that I was only going to be able to help her so far. But by that point, we were one of the only places that actually helped her. So even though I found better doctors for her that took over, and those were the right choices, and it's been good for her, at the time, there was a little bit of an attachment in that she didn't really want to leave. My wife could see it more than me because I'm the doctor. I just, want to help everybody. And, but she could see it that she wasn't getting better and was plateauing. And so, she was the one that maybe pushed the issue a little bit more, but the reality was that she was plateauing. I had been discussing referring her out. But it took a couple months before we made the transition. That's all I have for questions for that.
Thank you.
One question.
This is Mr. Turbinson. So you've been aware of this investigation, the complaint for over a year, right?
Correct.
Why are you just bringing the records today for the patient?
Because records are a weakness of mine, because I'm a bit of a perfectionist and a procrastinator, and her case was pretty complex, and there was a lot of work that was done, and I tend to use handwritten notes, and then I will transcribe them with a computerized notes program, which is what I used to use, but is no longer supported by the software company. So it's like half of her records are nice computerized notes, the other half are handwritten. And I wanted them to be perfect, so I would put it off. And the other reason was her billing account was kind of a mess. In other words, I was seeing multiple family members. She was bringing her children, her husband, and it was all kind of lumped together. And when I got the order from the board, it wasn't just for the records, it was also for the billing. So that's the first one, that her billing account was a mess as far as where everything stood on that aspect. That's been fairly cleaned up now. The other thing too is it's really irrelevant, but been in practice 19 years, never had a complaint. In fact, I've never seen any inside of a courtroom. And when I first got in practice, I met a few colleagues who scared the dickens out of me about the board and told these crazy stories about how they were basically being tarred and feathered and their lives were being ruined. I can see now why you have new licensees attend board meetings. I wish that would have been the way it was when I first got my license, because this has been very educational and very thorough and very, very professional, but not a witch hunt, which is what it was painted out to be. So the combination of all those things, and being a perfectionist, being a procrastinator, and then after I got the order from the board, I still had a good relationship with the patient. So I contacted her and said,
I'm sorry to interrupt. I need you to be concise. Get to the point, answer the question.
All right.
Okay. Go ahead. Did he answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Ms. Powell, do you have any questions?
No, it's the question I have.
Okay, no, so that's not a good excuse. Okay,
nope.
You're supposed to keep contemporaneous notes that are producible to share with another physician who might need to provide care. And you're not supposed to take your time perfecting notes to the best of your recollection. As time passes, the quality of the notes diminishes, and then fabricate billing potentially. So you didn't help yourself any by not complying with the subpoena for the record. We rely on the records to get to the bottom of what happened. And the records may have helped your case if we had them and we could see that the patient wasn't responding as it relates to an abandonment issue. So that said, Dr. Bennett, do you have any questions?
Yes, Dr. Greener, thank you. Dr. Duff, I'm Dr. Bennett. I noticed that you were notified by certified mail and in that no mail receptacle and able to forward. Did you change a mailing address or something and not notify the board? What were the circumstances surrounding that lack of delivery of that communication?
He was asking regarding your mailing address change?
Yes, no. Same mailing address for a while. You're talking about the notice that was sent to the PO box?
Dr. Bennett, did you get that question?
Yes, I did. I understand that a certified notice complaint was sent via regular mail, and mailed to the address of record, and it came back no mail receptacle, unable to forward. And I understand also that it's the RCC's obligation to make sure that we have current information. So I'd like to know what the story was there.
I can't really hear what you're saying.
So Dr. Bennett was asking about your P.O. box was listed as your address of record, and certified mail was sent there, and it was not deliverable. Is that what happened? Dr. Bennett?
It says that it was returned, no mail receptacle, unable to forward.
So you didn't get the letter?
Correct.
Okay. Have you had trouble with your P.O. box?
No, I mean, I think what may have happened is we got a drip mail, and that's primarily what we can get. We do not know.
I would expect a certified letter you'd have to sign for when you went to your P.O. box.
Right.
So you show up, you go to get your mail.
Right, well, that's how I got there. Yeah,
yeah,
how I got this.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't really know what happened on that, but I got this one.
Okay. Okay. So mail
right.
Take by the post office.
I do know that, and again, I'm not blaming COVID for everything, but I do know that we were a lot more lax in checking the mailbox last year. Obviously, that's been remedied.
Okay.
We are making sure we check that box at least weekly.
Okay. Any more questions, Dr. Bennett?
Yes. My records show that we have not been provided with any information for 2018 and 2019. Is that information still current? And if so, why not?
So did you hear that? He's asking about your continuing education for 2018 and
19. Oh, yes. Yes, I actually brought that.
So you brought it with you, but you didn't submit it to the board. So we don't have it. You have it with you.
Yes, correct.
Okay. So he said that he has it, but we haven't seen it.
Yeah, I'm able to hear him. Apparently, he can't hear me. And finally, and this is a question for the board, I see in our board brief that we have additional information that was stated to have appeared in our packet in the form of additional information, police reports and court documents and a letter of representation. Is that just an administrative error?
Ms. Kendall, did you... Dr. Bennett, what was your question regarding representation?
The board materials, the board brief, states to us that this, well, let me see here. I'm sorry. Just retract that question. Apparently, I'm looking at the wrong document.
Okay.
So, no, I have no further questions.
You're scared of
where is this heat?
Okay. So with that, I'm going to move on over to our patient A3, and I want to know, you've heard the doctor's testimony. What is your recollection of the events? And I guess my question for you is, before I switch to you, let me ask Dr. Duff one more question. There was an allegation about your phone, your staff wife having access to your phone. And is that a normal way you communicate, I guess, in a home office? You know, you patients have your cell phone number. Do you have a separate cell phone number that's for patients and one for your personal? How do you manage that?
No, just one.
Okay.
In recent times, we are shifting over to more encrypted, but some of the newer, like Signal, but that was so well known a few years ago. But
and so your wife is involved with patient care. She's involved with your office running, and she has access to communications on your phone with your patient.
Correct.
Okay. Now, patient AC, go ahead and tell us what you've heard and what's accurate, what's not, and then I'll ask my board members if they have questions for you.
Okay, I filed a complaint. I included a letter that I sent him in January after I had left. There has been more than one attempt to try to get my record. And if you want the documentation, I can give it to you.
Well, he admitted that his staff or they knew about it. And it didn't happen. He admitted that.
Okay.
And I think he admitted that the records weren't even completed until who knows when.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So.
You said you listed five things. Okay. Can you say them again?
So, is that okay, Chairman, members of the board?
Yes.
Patient abandonment, breach of confidentiality, failure to release medical records. Non-compliance with the board's subpoena, which is a mailbox issue, it's the fifth, and then unprofessional conduct.
Okay. How do you come to the conclusion of patient abandonment?
So, I thought that was in your original complaint. Was that something you were concerned about or not so much?
I don't think that's something I indicated.
Okay. And patient abandonment could mean several things. You know, but continuity of care being lost, you know, if you're treated and you're trying to get back into the office and you want to make an appointment and you're told to go to it and you're referred to another doctor versus just stopping communication with you and that type of thing. So if you don't have abandonment issues, that's fine. Our board can deal with that. It sounds like your main complaint is that you requested your records and you didn't get them. Did you want those for continuity of care to go to another doctor's office, or what did you need those for?
Well, and also because I've moved into the office space myself, so I wanted to know for my own benefit, so now I can look at it with my own practitioner eyes.
Okay. So you don't have any patient safety-related complaints. You don't think you were mistreated. You know, you were happy with the treatment you were getting and so on, but then when your relationship with them came to an end as a doctor-patient relationship, you wanted your records and you didn't get them.
Correct.
Okay. All right, thank you. Board members, any questions for patient AC?
No questions.
Okay.
Yes, I do. So you still have not personally gotten the records that you requested, but that is, if you were to receive them, that would be part of the resolution that you'd be seeking for today. Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Bennett, any questions for patient AC?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All right. Any additional comments? We'll start with Dr. Duff, and then we'll finish with patient AC before we decide what we're going to do today.
No, I'm proud of the care provided to AC. I'm proud of how I represent the chiropractic profession. I believe I am a very good ambassador for our profession.
running a tanker ship and having my ducks on a row as far as keeping up with mundane things like mail. And our relationship was never bad, to the point where I was able to communicate with her after I got the notice, and she said, yeah, no problem. Just I'll cancel the complaint if you bring me the records. And then I just said, well, what do you need them for? There's probably not a whole lot, but I understand now. And she really has entered that space, and is learning a lot. So I do want to apologize to her and to the board for wasting all of your time.
Okay, and you're aware that in the future, you don't need to sit around and intellectually decide why somebody needs their records. If it's a patient and they want them, you have 10 days to get them out to them.
Correct.
Okay. Patient AB, any comments? You don't have to say anything if you don't want to, but if you've got something to say, you can.
I believe some of the things he just said, well, not the last part, but when he was talking before, are a little bit inaccurate.
Okay, do you want to tell us what they are?
Yes and no.
Take your time.
The participation of his wife was not a success, at least not the way I thought.
Board members, we've got a violation of a subpoena for records and some other issues. Is this something that you, well, you know, first of all, we've never even received the records, reviewed the records, so it's my feeling we need to continue this and get those records now that they're supposedly available along with the billing records. So that would be my recommendation. Does anybody want to make a motion to any sense?
Yeah, this is Dr. Knopf. We'll make a motion to continue and receive the patient record.
Okay. So the billing in regular.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. All
right. Is there a second?
I second the motion.
I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Dr. Bennett, you've got a time delay, so you were third and you weren't second.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay, so the ayes have it. So you are still compelled to comply with the subpoena. We need those records. You need to submit those to staff. You'll be contacted by staff in writing, and we'll come back and do this again on another day. Continue the investigation. So, thank you.
So does that mean there'll be another board meeting?
There will. Yeah. And we'll, after we review your records in the billing, we'll decide how we're going to handle the allegations in front of us today. All right. Thank you. That's all for today. All right. Our next tab is regarding Dr. Leslie Figa, tab number 6, case number 2021-014. And can I get a board brief?
Yes, sir. Allegations against Dr. Figa are as follows. Failure to release records, improper treatment, unprofessional conduct.
Okay, Dr. Figa, are you with us?
I am here.
Hi, welcome. Can you introduce yourself for the record?
Dr. Leslie Figa, also go by LACI, L-A-C-I, LACI Figa.
Hi. Okay, and then the complainant patient with the initials J, B, are you present as well? Calling out to JC one more time. Okay. Dr. Figa, what do you say to the allegation? We've got your response.
Everything is in my response that I wrote the letter, and I'll try to sum it up real quick. First, I'd like to acknowledge my understanding what this patient was going through and what he was diagnosed with before I even saw him in my office, and I took all of that into consideration as I've dealt with this syndrome through a close family friend and watched her deteriorate through her high school years, so I know how serious this syndrome is. And obviously he came in, all the paperwork is there that he filled out by hand and signed and gave evidence that he was already diagnosed with this condition, which is leading to a lot of the problems that he relayed to us on trying to get some relief from. So we attempted the best we could to do that, gave him everything that I thought was safe and appropriate as far as the care and the treatment. And he did well after the first visit. Paid in full, had no complaints, rebooked a second appointment, which all contradicts his initial letter and complaint saying he came in once, we heard him, never came back. But that couldn't be more further from the truth, but I know it's hard to remember when you're filing a complaint that's been 4 years ago, and you might not remember word for word. But also there's a lot of quoting me in that initial complaint letter that couldn't also be more inaccurate as far as one visit saying these things. A lot of these things I don't even say to any person in my office as far as treatments. Just hang in there, finish the treatment. We don't do that. I even refund money when people leave my office and they don't get relief, period. So my response today is the same as it was in that letter. Once I received the complaint, I was completely blown away and caught off guard, but I guess they knew Dr. Wood when they get a complaint. And I believe I explained everything there that he's continued to suffer from this. He's seen multiple doctors in every possible field because I know this is a hard disease syndrome to get a handle on. There is no cure. It's an autoimmune disease. And obviously everything he's saying that we caused, he came in the office with. And I imagined it got worse and progressed to the point where I don't know. Records requests, same thing. Nothing in writing, nothing by phone call. He lived less than a mile or two from my office. He could have stopped by if no one was answering the phone, which we do. I have office staff, front desk, back office, everything in place for this reason. Caller ID, voicemails, nothing's on there. I would even challenge phone records if we had to continue going forward with this case. I'm an open book here. Any questions that you have, please ask. I just want to get this behind me. I've been waiting for this for the last year to get passed, because obviously anyone that reads this complaint can see that we didn't cause anything, and that's the reason I'm sitting here alone in my office and not with an attorney, because he didn't want to even be here to charge me for the hourly rate, because there's no case here basically to go forward with. So we're just hoping this gets dismissed, and obviously he's not even here. And I don't even know if this was a personal vendetta. I don't know the patient at all until he came to my office, but he did live in the area where we practiced, where I have several competitors that I worked with in the past. I don't know if someone pushed him down this field or he's just out of options and looking for someone to offset costs or gosh knows what. I honestly have no idea what this came about, but I think it sums up pretty much in the notes and everything else.
Okay, so Dr. Figa, why didn't you send us the treatment records like you were subpoenaed to send us?
I did. I have everything here. I send everything.
The only thing that we have in my board materials is, I think, about 5 pages of an intake form. So how many pages of records are there?
He has 2 visits, 2 days, all the soap notes. This was all forwarded with that initial paperwork, intake forms. Everything's been sent and within the time frame of when I was supposed to. I can resend it right now. I sent it, like I said, I can have to find the date right here in my email, but that was the same email that everything was included. His handwritten intake forms and our electronic notes.
Okay, so I'm looking at an application for treatment, patient application for treatment. page one, page two of that. Page three, the systems review. And then welcome to our office letter. And then a acknowledgement of notice of privacy practices. So that is all that we have. You're telling me that there are a couple of dates of service?
Yep, there's two dates of service for 11/4/16 and 11/8/16, which were both paid for by him. Have the receipts. I have his sign and signature on those pages. So that right there contradicts his initial complaint letter that he came in once and was hurt, never came back.
Okay.
He even booked a third appointment. I apologize on 11/14 that he canceled. So. He even booked a third appointment after leaving his second visit where he claims he was hurt on the first one. So he wasn't hurt on the first or the second and booked a third one but didn't come in. And then 4 years later, he says, I'm responsible for his symptoms for basically Pott's syndrome, Pott's disease.
Okay, thank you. So can I confirm with staff? I have what I have. I don't have anything else. Does anybody else have more? Okay. And then, board members, any questions? We'll start with Ms. Powell.
No questions.
Dr. Bennett.
I think he's on mute.
Dr. Bennett, are you here?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry. I have the same lack of deficiency in terms of stroke notes that you are reporting, but I have no questions.
Okay.
I can resend those, and I can resend the timestamp on my email that I forwarded to the board as requested as soon as I receive this certified mail.
Okay, we'd like that.
Sure.
Dr. Figa, this is Dr. Knopf. Have you had any practice claims issued against you from this patient in this matter, or is this the only complaint that the patient
has? Not a malpractice claim, not a bad review, not a phone call to tell us that he was hurting and injured, that, you know, not a peep. Or a single thing on any form.
Okay. That's all I have. Thank you. And Mr. Turbin, nothing for me.
Okay. Well, we've got 2 days of service that he says they're coming. Board members, do you want to revisit this later today after we look at those if possible, or bring it back on another day or dismiss?
I can send it to you within 2 minutes if you'd like. I know if you have any more things going on, I can have it to you before you're done with the next hearing or whatever you call it.
Okay. You have 120 seconds.
Okay. I'm going to yell real quick from my front desk. I'm in my office.
Okay. Board members, what's your pleasure?
I think we just continue to get the records he said he sent over. That we don't have a subpoena issue and try to close it out.
Yeah, I hope we don't have to go through this again. You know, obviously he's not here for a reason.
Okay, so go ahead and email them. I'm going to ask staff to print them when we get them. And then
can you give me a direct email you wanted to go to, and I'll do that as soon as we hang up? Or just the board in general? To Ms. Kennel or anybody in particular?
Yes, send it to Ms. Kennel.
I got her email right here. I'll forward it within, literally 5 minutes, not even a second longer.
Okay. Go ahead and do that. We're going to go on a short break, and we'll come back in 10 minutes.
Okay.
It is 12:16 right now, so we'll be back at 12:26.
All right. You'll have it when you get back.
I'm going to do that.
She's very proud of it. She's very excited to talk to her about it. So she said, I'll just come back next time. Well, maybe we can just do that. Okay. And call the public is one of the first things.
Yeah.
She just didn't want to be late. So she ran.
Okay, the time is 12:29. We're back in open session. We have printed copies of soap notes for patient JC for date of service 11/8/2016 and 11/4/2016. Okay. So board members, take a moment, look it over, we'll discuss.
I'll add one more thing, too, if that's okay. I have that Triton decompression table that my patients use, and I think if anyone has the same one that I have, it has an auto shutoff button that the patient actually holds and can stop the unit at any time.
Yeah, I read that in your response.
Okay.
So how does that, tell me about the compression table or the decompression table. And I know you said you, in your response, that you've never had a problem with it. I haven't used one. Is it highly unlikely, in your opinion, that someone would be injured on a decompression table or just depending on their condition?
It both. It's certainly possible. I won't sit here and tell you that's not going to happen because it certainly is possible. But when we use it, we always tend to be extra cautious, and especially with this going in with the syndrome we had, I already knew this. So we start with the basic program of a 15-pound pull maximum, and I believe somewhere between 8 and 10 pounds for a minimum, and that's what I would pull a geriatric patient, any patient with a radicular pattern that shows that they would respond to this care. Obviously, there's conditions and contraindications of which I didn't see anything unnecessary here, and he actually did well on it and actually booked a follow-up appointment. So, but again, he had the button in his hand. At no point did anyone say, keep going, it's almost done. I don't do that. If someone's uncomfortable, we stop there, move to another therapy, or we just reevaluate why that was a problem. I don't sit there and put anyone through any pain or torture, that's for sure.
Dr. Bennett?
Yeah, just for the record, I am certified in spinal decompression. I am familiar with the Triton table. The protocol that Dr. Figa describes is completely appropriate for a trial of care for a patient with even reasonably advanced cervical degenerative conditions. So I'm comfortable with what he did.
Okay. All right. Board members, if you've had a chance to look at the records, any other comments about the records? Okay. And then do we have any confirmation that this was, in fact, emailed back when he said, or do we have a violation of a subpoena?
At glance, it doesn't seem like it's there, but I don't want you to hold me to that. I'd like to go through it.
Careful.
He said he can
provide. Yeah, my front desk is looking for that first email because it was sent to Ms. Kennel last over a year ago, October, November timeframe when I received the letter.
What you have is the entire response that I received. So
okay.
If it isn't not in that paperwork, then he did not provide it.
Okay. So, board members, what's your pleasure? We have three allegations in front of us. We can take no action. We can dismiss.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion to dismiss. No basis.
Is there a second?
Oh, okay.
Mr. Turbinson, second. Any further discussion? Okay, I'm going to call for the question. Those in favor of dismissing with no basis to proceed, signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? All right, hearing none, this matter is dismissed. Dr. Figa, you're done with this one.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, we're going to go on to tab number 7, which is the matter of Dr. Richard Matera. Dr. Matera, are you with us? I know you weren't earlier.
Hey, just for the record, Chair, board members, communication from Attorney Mandy Carvis that she has not been retained in this matter.
Did she say that she no longer represents him in any of our cases, or?
That was the indication of the email, okay. And she said, I'll be sending in 2 letters of withdrawal for the cases that we heard informal interviews.
Okay. Dr. Nahiri, can you give us a board brief, please?
Yes, sir. In the matter of Dr. Richard Matera, allegations are as follows. Violations of board order number 2018-043, order of probation was issued on March 7th of 2019. Failed to renewing chiropractic license and failure to complete CE, continuing education, and unprofessional conduct.
Okay. And so he has already headed to formal hearing from our earlier test, from our formal interview. It would be my recommendation just to combine this with a formal hearing.
All right, I'll make a motion to combine this case number with the previous case numbers we heard earlier today and bundle it in the next formal hearing.
And that is based on the potential violations of law and factual allegations in the board brief?
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Are there any opposed?
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay, we have five ayes, and we will move on to tab number 8, which is a matter of licensure with James Winbury. Who's going to handle that one?
It's a matter of James Winbury. The board was provided with a memo. Dr. Winbury alleges that he voluntarily surrendered his license in Colorado, stating that he was required to have submitted continuing education. However, he didn't have it at the time, but he signed the consent agreement to surrender his license without knowing what he was signing at the time or the gravity of that document that he signed. And then he provided the CEs. He states that he has ample CEs. And he has applied for a license here in Arizona. He has not practiced for over a decade, but he wants to get back into practice and wants to provide DMX training for other providers.
Okay, and Dr. Winbury, are you present? Call out to Dr. James Winbury. Are you present? If so, unmute. Introduce yourself. Okay, board members, what would you like to do?
Dr. Mayer, did we ever hear back? I know you reached out to Dora for any factual information around.
Dora, we've been around, and I reached out to their, I requested to speak with their executive director and received an email from the program manager stating if you want the actual investigation report, submit an email, which I already submitted an email. So there was lack of cooperation or courtesy, interagency courtesy. I'm not sure what's going on, but then I spoke with the board members there, or not board members, board staff. They said, oh, is that what he said? Implying that he surrendered his license voluntarily, that it implied that there were more to it than just.
It would be nice to have copies of those CE hours that he found. Now he has them legislatively.
Well, the CE hours are for Colorado.
Which are stricter than ours, but just to know whether he's on the up and up.
In his voluminous letter, he states that he has everything, he's willing to provide everything that if he requested it. And so I was not comfortable approving the license application without the board reviewing it. And I don't know, Ms. Kennel, do you have anything you wanted to add based on what, did you happen to look at the letter he sent?
No.
Okay.
Do we know when he surrendered it? Was it just last year?
Yes. In my memo, I'm looking for the memo I sent to you.
March 11th of 2021.
The region.
Yes. And it was for the 30 hours of CEs over a 2-year period.
Alleged. March or a little later. Looks like on page 7 of his letter, he says he received the legal notice on March 11th. And after that, sometime he surrendered. I believe, if my memory serves me well,
his volunteer surrender was on in April.
Okay.
And that's what it shows on their website, which is what they refer to.
And he should have copies of all these of all the documents we need, correct?
Yeah.
Because he would provide those.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be, you know, outside the realm of possibility for the board to change this matter, invite him to come here and discuss these issues with you to actually find out, you know, what occurred in this matter and why he surrendered because of the CE.
He claims that he did not know what he was signing at. So,
that's kind of hard to believe, you know, but sometimes it's true.
He may have thought it was a non-disciplinary,
right,
handing over of his license, not a disciplinary document.
Right.
In the factual notes in the memo, too, I just want to clear up. We're saying that there's an Arizona license. 7217 is currently inactive.
Yes, that's true.
Yes, because he's attempting to renew his license.
The renew
it.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
And for clarifying.
2 years to reactivate, right?
Yes.
So is he within the 2 years? So he's initiated the reactivation process?
Yes.
Okay.
Did he complete a reinstatement package?
That's what I meant, reinstatement.
Yes, submitted a reinstatement, or an application with all the required
documents. Okay, so can I just direct staff to reach out to him and tell him we want those additional documents, and we'll put it on our agenda coming up soon.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think you just did it.
Okay. Anything else? All right. Let's go to our next tab. Is tab number 9. Everyone's favorite. So in the past, it's easier for us when we look at these to have all like the number lines on each of these, so we can kind of just refer by, you know, line number 3 on whatever tab that'd be helpful. And then I am starting with the executive session minutes for 2021-922. And the only thing I saw was Mr. Monahan's name spelled incorrectly. He needs a G like Torino.
Good catch. I'll remember that.
Did anybody else find anything? Okay. Is there a move to approve as amended?
I'll make a motion to approve as amended.
Second anywhere?
Second.
Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, hearing none. They are approved as amended. All right, let's go to the open session meeting minutes for the same day. Okay, page number 1 of 8. Page number 2. All right, so I know we have to paraphrase the notes to condense them, but I just want to say that first line, it says, Dr. Guarino stated that there is no separate record-keeping standard for a doctor who works for a corporation. What I was saying is there's no second, there is no separate record keeping standard regardless of who your employer is and how we get paid. Meaning a cash practice versus an insurance company, mm-hmm. like the record keeping standard, whatever it is, regardless of who your employer is and how we get paid. So if we can, does that help?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, any other corrections? Page 208. There was another one that I've got. Wrong day. Okay. So let's continue to page 3. Page 4. Page 5. 6. 7. 8.
I'll make the motion to approve as amended.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. The ayes have it. Records are approved as amended, and we'll go to the open session meeting minutes for 10:27:21 now. Okay, let me pull this up. Okay, page 1. Page 2. Again, right here, the second paragraph starts with Dr. Guarino stated.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the process when the board puts somebody on probation is sure, blah, blah, blah. And then in the middle it says Dr. Guarino stated he appreciated Dr. Gillen looking at the consent agreement that was offered and trying to comply with some of the terms. I don't think that I said that. What I was saying is that I appreciated that he was trying to self-remediate and get in front of the complaints that were in front of them. I don't think it had anything to do with the consent agreement at that point. So if we could clarify that, I'd appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and then how about page 3?
On page 2, there's Ms. Powell at the very bottom of the app.
Okay.
Yep.
They probably said yes.
I probably said yes.
I believe when I listened to the audio, she did say yes. That's why I was talking about it.
I was getting ahead of myself.
And I wasn't 100% sure how you all wanted to use
it. Kind of fixed it for me.
Okay, next time I'll fix it for you.
Okay. Page 3 of 8. Page 4 of 8. Page 5 of 8. All right, page 5. If you look at the end of page 4, the case number is identical to the next case for Sam Carr.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be case number 2020-001 for Sam Carr. If you want to go back to the agenda for now.
Okay, I will. Check the agenda.
Okay, and then at the bottom it says, after discussion, Dr. Bennett made a motion and was seconded by Ms. Powell to issue a disciplinary advisory letter. And then later on it says non-disciplinary, and I think it was non-disciplinary.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does anybody recall?
Yeah, non-disciplinary.
Okay.
Okay. And then the continuing education requirement for that, I thought, was 6 hours in record keeping by Dr. Bennett, and it says 6 hours in chronic pain management.
So it was 6 hours in chronic pain management.
Okay.
That's what.
Can you get 6 hours in chronic pain management?
Just for Dr. Carr?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I had down.
I mean, you can do pain management, but can you?
Yeah, he is up for
submitted that same day.
I don't know.
Same day.
Okay. All right, great.
Yeah. Thanks to online.
Good. All right, how about page 6?
Page 6, at the very top, Dr. Kevin Lee is present to represent the joint virtually. It was live.
Right. So in person?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
How do you know you're recute?
I got a front row seat.
Page seven. Okay, I have, well, okay, so, it says, Mr. Piro stated, gotta find it. This is why I need my line numbers. This is for Michelizio. Okay, it says, I don't know that we need to correct this, but for the record, it says that the interim director mentioned one solution might be she was the interim director at that time.
No, she was not. No? Was it Boho? Director Boho was the.
Okay.
She was never an acting.
That's right. It was Justin.
Okay. Okay. All right. Carry on then. All right. How about page 8? Okay. Very good.
I'll make a motion to approve as amended.
Second.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The ayes have it. And we'll move on to the executive session meeting minutes for the same day.
Mr. Monahan's name is
Justin. Actually, it's not.
It's not? I copy and paste a lot.
Yeah. It's not in the lower two.
Wow. That's talking about it.
Oh, yeah. I didn't catch that. Okay. All right, so we'll correct Mr. Monahan's name. Anything else?
We'll make the motion to approve as amended.
Okay. For a second.
Was I present for this?
Yes.
I was. I recused myself.
You recused yourself.
After this.
Yes. Okay.
Never mind.
Okay, I'll second. Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Yeah, I got it. All right, let's move on to the executive director's report.
So I'm proud of my team to report that we've had a total of 300 renewals, 599 to be processed, 255 were processed in November, and all of October renewals will be completed by this Friday. But also licenses that were issued in November, we had 4 by examination, 4 by reciprocity, 2 by endorsement, and a total of 8. And then we received 12 license applications in November. So, we're making headway as far as our renewals and licensures concerned. Our budget year to date for fiscal year 2022, as of October, our revenues were $39,000 and our total expenditures were $64,000. Our beginning appropriations were $38,654 and for the second quarter allotment, we had $109,250, the total expenditure in our quarter two of $64,150 in quarter two. As far as our allotment is concerned, that's because of losing vacancies. We have a number of vacancies. We are now, I'm happy to report, we are now fully staffed for the first time in a long time. And our ending application
election as of October, and we don't have Novembers yet, so that would be different. It was 83,753. So again, remember that there are total appropriation is about 494,273. You're probably one of, next to the funeral board, you're probably one of the poorest.
We need that. Where is the case where we collect money?
We don't get those any money to be collected.
Zero?
Yeah.
I thought there was some avenue where we could collect these. Like.
Now there'd be a conflict of interest because we'd make everybody do that. I'm kidding.
That's a beer. We have our licensing manager. We have our investigator, who's the veteran of the board, and Vanderveen is our deputy director. I'm happy to have her on board.
Awesome.
And we have Diane Del Lucio, who's been sitting out there as our administrative assistant. So I think together we make a mighty team.
Great work, Dr. Nairi, for pulling it together and going through the hiring process and making it happen. I appreciate that. And you got kind of thrown into the fire and there's a lot at stake. Over 2,000 chiropractors that need to get licensed this year. And thank you.
Well, thank you. My pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.
Happy to be able to do a profession. Baptism by fire. I would also like, as part of my report, to discuss the calendar of meetings for 2022. We would like to have, as much as possible, more than 35 days because of the noticing. And I know that there were 4 months, including February, that we mentioned earlier. February and 8 August, where we don't have meeting scheduled, as well as May. As busy as we are, and as we are trying to catch up with the backlog, I would propose to consider having more meetings. And I'm going to turn it over to Vanderveen to talk about how we came up with a recurring meeting, which will also hopefully resolve our technology issues in this room. This is not one of our favorite ones. I think I can speak for everybody on the team. We have many issues here. The boardroom A, which is used by the medical board, is available. It's a better room. And just 2 days ago, the directors meeting, they reported that they're going to invest in updating the audio and technology in that room, so it'll be a better room for us. I don't know if you've been to the boardroom A. It's more like a courtroom. It can be a bit intimidating. It's very well set up, and it's much larger. So, would you like to talk about what you came up with?
So, thank you, Dr. Nairi. Based on his direction, asking for 45 days between meetings, I adjusted them, but when I did the adjustment, I kind of verified on what boardrooms were available, because I think that's part of the problem we've run into is we've scheduled a meeting and then there's not availability. Under his direction, I was really focused on boardroom A. This would put us in boardroom A for all of 2022 and going into 2023. So there's also a 2023 calendar for year review, so we could just set those out, and I think that would help Jackie with preparing her investigations, where we were looking at a little bit longer timeline than just the 12 months. It would still leave us with 4 months that we don't have meetings, but it would be a little bit more concurrent in that we'd be having a meeting every 45 days. So it would be more consistent in that regard. So it's just maybe a little bit of a shifting of the dates. The new proposed dates are in green, and the old meetings the current meetings are in blue. And then that is state holidays.
And you're proposing the third Tuesday of every month?
It's not the third Tuesday of every month. It's a Tuesday or it's a Friday. It's kind of how it shook out based on the 45 days.
Okay.
and Wednesday on June 1st?
Yes. And I think that has to do, and I think that has to do with we already had a meeting there. I can move it to Tuesday in May if you would prefer, but we already had a meeting on the 1st, so I didn't, I'm open if that works for you.
So we're not going to have a meeting February, May.
And December? And September.
Oh, okay. So those dates moved a couple weeks earlier.
Yep.
And October is the FDLB meeting usually, right, Dr. Green?
I think so, yeah. And then May is the other one, but we're not going to meet during May, so.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions?
The 2022, we don't have January, February, May.
How far out can we book the meeting?
As far out as you'd like.
Well, we do have January. Yeah, January 12th is still on.
Yeah, January 12th I left on here, and that, I believe A is available, and we've already booked for January. So this is just moving March forward, basically.
Well, that's the meeting February.
Have any of you seen this room? It's huge. Is it in there? Huge. It does look like a courtroom.
It does. It has a higher diet.
Mm-hmm.
And also, in terms of if you wanted to continue with the utilizing of the Zoom calls and that, it has the camera equipment. It's a little more sophisticated than how we've been going about it.
Speaking of Zoom, the city is recommended that we invest in a Zoom subscription, which we use the Zoom Pro, because it will give us more flexibility, better capability. So we will do that. Google Meet, very limited.
A little bit better?
Yes.
We, as the host, you have more control.
Okay.
We can add co-hosts. We can control people's microphones, like,
yeah,
and their cameras. And so when somebody comes in, we can turn them on, we can rename them.
Yeah.
So we just have a little bit, I think it's a little bit more user-friendly. Additionally, there's a webcast option, so where you can just broadcast, and you don't have their cameras, but they can monitor and watch the meeting for the public.
Is there any liability around renaming people? I'm sorry.
No, they can rename themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, not rename themselves, but yeah, they can use the initials.
Yeah.
Might be better for...
Well, that has happened. Like, we've had people sign in on someone else's computer, and then we've got a random name affiliated with someone and everything for some of
them. Right. You can rename them their case number and their initials. Like, there's just, I think there's just some more options that would be better suited for how we need to use it.
Okay.
According to the schedule you guys have to spend, your Thanksgiving weekend setting board materials.
And then I think we have a meeting after in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
I think in January it would be right after the Martin Luther King holiday.
Okay, so are we all good with this? Dr. Bennett?
He's on the beach.
Dr. Bennett, you have the new meeting schedule?
You muted him.
I can't hear you.
You were unmuted, Dr. Bennett. Now you're muted.
I'm sorry. I have been listening carefully, and I have no objection to anything I've heard.
Okay.
I'm a man on vacation.
Anybody else? Meeting dates are okay. Okay, let's do it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So we will plan out through 2023 that they will secure their room eventually.
I'll be gone by then, so.
Okay, later. That's funny. You're gone and you're gone. I may be right behind you.
My term is up in the middle of June of 2023. So I don't know how
to reappoint.
I kind of turned out because it's my second full term, but I don't know, like in the past, if a board member is not replaced, sometimes they've hung around. So I don't know how that works.
Most of my boards have people who have served me more than 8 years.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to stick around with us.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to call to the public now. This is your chance to say whatever you want. We can't reply to what you say. Is there anybody joining virtually? Because we don't have anybody in our audience here. All right, hearing none, this meeting is adjourned at 1:05.